Just to summarize the machlokas again, according to Rav Hamnuna, it would seem that there's two different types of she'ela. A and B. This is the way he understands the Bala Vimo. It seems the way we've been learning is that it's a completely different arrangement. One is where you remove the object completely from the jurisdiction of the owner, and you're in charge. You assume responsibility, and you're in charge, and then it's disconnected, so to speak. You're the Baal. For all intents and purposes, you become the Baal. But if you borrow the object with the owner, so then, and that means to say two things, that it's the duration, of the she'ela, and he's working he's part of the she'ela. The Baal has to be part of the very she'ela. He's a component. So it's the object and the owner. Oh, so then that makes perfect sense to us. It's something which makes a lot of sense to us, that if you're borrowing some machine from a company and you're bringing and they're sending along one of their workers to guide and manage it, so then that's different. I'm not responsible. He's still connected to it. He's the one that's using it. So the usage is from the owner. So then that would be very, very clear that the responsibility has to do with the usage. If I'm using it, so then I'm responsible. But if I'm getting the benefit, in this case, I'm really getting the benefit of the object. The mere fact that I'm getting the benefit of the object is not what renders me obligated. It's the fact that I'm the user. So when I use it, then I'm responsible. But I took the owner with it. The owner is the one who's so it's a gift, so to speak. That makes sense. What is a little bit more difficult, and the reason why it's difficult is because it's hard for us to understand why. But when you're studying halacha, you have to really put aside the why. Is the other position, which the biggest problem, it just strikes me or us as being arbitrary. That is to say that if you borrow an object and you borrow the owner with it, or the owner has already borrowed to you or hired to you. But the key over here is that it's two can be two completely different things. That he's your worker. He's working in one place for you, and he has nothing to that work that he's doing has nothing to do with the object. And then you borrow an object from him, and he doesn't even have to be with you for the entire period of time. He's just all right. The Gemara will discuss. Which period of time? The time of the borrowing or the time of the accident? So we conclude at the time of the borrowing. That's determinative. So that's Baal Avimo. And then, even if it was just for a short while, if he was just the owner was borrowed to you for an hour, and then he goes home and you're with the object, you're exempt. So that is difficult because it just seems to be an arbitrary point. Nevertheless, we should see if we can, make some halachic sense out of it. You could say that's the halacha. That's exactly, yeah, of course, you could always say that's it. I mean, we accept it that way, obviously. I mean, that's the decree of the Torah, so to speak. But we're trying to get past that and to try to understand how it works. Step one should be just to see if you can formulate his halachic position in contradistinction to the other side. What we really want to know is how he understood the idea of Baal Avimo, such that it works itself out this way. For the first side, we said he understood that it was a different situation. That there's two different types of borrowings. One is completely different than the other. And one is where you borrowed along with it. So he's part and parcel of the whole thing. But that's where he's working his object. He's with the object. If he comes with the object, so then okay. So he's in charge. The problem for this position is that the borrowing of the ox is completely unrelated to the borrowing of the owner. Now, according to Rav Hamnuna, that's the essence, that it's not unrelated. It's connected. So therefore, it's a new phenomenon. It's not the same as when you borrow just the object and then without the owner. Let's ask another question. I was thinking about, because we know that the din of Baal Avimo doesn't apply only to a shomer; it applies to all the shomer. Correct? That means it applies to a shomer Achinam and a shomer Sacha. All right. Now, according to Rav Nuna, how could it apply to them? Since he says that Imo means Imo b'mlachto, with and with the work, but a shomer Achinam is not a, doesn't work the animal. Neither does a shomer Sacha work the animal. So, how does that whole idea work out according to him? According to us, according to the Psak, since Imo doesn't mean in the same work, so then it can apply to every situation. I'm a shomer Achinam for your object, and you happen to be working for me. That's fine, because the Imo factor will always kick in, since Imo doesn't necessarily have to be connected to that form of labor. Now, in the case of Chinam, I don't work the object. I'm just guarding it. So the person whom I'm guarding it for happens to be working for me. So that's the Imo, and I'm exempt. Well, by Shoma Chinam, it's only for Pshia. By Shoma Sacha. So Shoma Sacha, I'm getting paid to watch your object. I'm getting paid to watch your object, and you're doing a favor for me, or you're doing work for me. So, since we say that Imo doesn't mean Imo b'mlachto, rather it's just Imo, so then it'll kick in and I'll be exempt if it was Gneva Vaved, if it was stolen or lost. But according to Howard Rav Hamnuna, have a situation like that where there is no m'lachto there. I'm just a Shomer Sacha. You have to say, apparently, that Imo would mean, I mean, it's not so simple, that he's doing some work for you, and he must be using the object to do the work, and then he's asking you to guard it as a shomer chinam. But you don't have rights of usage. It'd be a funny kind of a case. It would seem to be a funny kind of case where he's doing work for you. Okay, let's say, well, you could have it. Let's say you have a construction going on in your house for a period of time, and he's using tools, and you're not the shoel at all. You're not borrowing it. You're not involved one way or the other. And then he asks you to guard his tools, or he pays you to guard his tools.
While he's using it.
During that period of time, whatever. Let's say, you know, their construction can go on for a while. Right, so it's in your house. You know, they have a site, they have stuff. You know, they leave stuff there. It's construction. It can go on for a few months. Let's ask ourselves a question. The way we're understanding it, Rav Hamnuna is saying there's two different kinds of she'ela. It's a different kind of she'ela. It's different arrangements from a substantive point of view. Would the other side agree with that in terms of their approach to Baal Avimo? Let me just throw out my thought. I would say that the other side is not learning that way. It's not that the factor of Baal Avimo changes the entire character of the arrangement. If you're going to say it changes the entire character of the arrangement, then there's two kinds of arrangement of Sheila. One, where the Baal is with him. It includes, in other words, the whole Sheila includes the Baal. The Baal is a component of the Sheila. So then it has to be like Rav Nuna. I mean, it has to be Bosa Mulach, and it has to be for the duration, because it's a different character of Sheila. It's hard to say that he holds that same thing, and the mere fact that he was with him at that time, at the time of the borrowing, for a minute, and then he ceased, to say that changes the character of the Sheila, is very difficult to say. So I would say that he says that's not the case. Baal Avimo is not like saying that there's two different, it doesn't modify or change the character of the Sheila itself. Same Sheila, from the substantive point of view, it's the same Sheila. Okay? But I would suggest, and we'll think about it some more, that he's learning that there's a different idea over here. I know it sounds very, very strange. But the question is, there's a shomer. You're a shomer. You're a guardian. And you have to guard. And then if you don't, then you have consequences, whatever the law is, you know, for theft, for this. For that. So the question is, do the responsibilities of the shomer stem from the fact that he has a chi of shmira per se? In other words, I would say that what he's saying is that there's two factors over here. there's the shomer, and then there's the assumption of responsibility. There must be an assumption of responsibility. The mere fact that I'm a guardian doesn't, in and of itself, create the responsibilities. But there's an assumption of responsibility. So the factor of ba'al of imo means that whenever there's ba'al of imo, he doesn't assume responsibility. That's the concept. I mean, if you're going to say it that way, I'm not going into why. We can think about that. But whenever the shomer or the shoel has that relationship to the owner at the time of the she'ela, so then it's a she'ela without the assumption of responsibility. So then it doesn't matter. It has nothing to do with the fact that he's the one that he's there. The she'ela is the same she'ela. From the substantive point of view, it's the same thing. The ba'al of imo factor does not qualify the nature of the she'ela of the chefza. Doesn't have to be related to the chefza. It's a separate thing. That the relationship between the shoel and the... There's a relationship there. And once you have that relationship, the shomer does not assume responsibilities. But he still does shmira. He does the shmira, otherwise not a shomer. You see? So the fact that I'm guarding... I mean, one can raise such a question that I agree to guard your object. I'm guarding your object. And then somebody stole it, so why do I have to pay? I didn't steal it. I mean, if I stole it, I'd have to pay. I didn't steal it. Could have been stolen from anyone. Could catch the thief. Why am I obligated to pay you back? Where's the damage? I didn't damage your object. So, that's a good question. Just because I'm guarding it, and even if I'm getting paid to do so, why should I? So, I didn't steal it. One can simply say that, or borrowing. Just because I'm borrowing it, so I'm borrowing it. So, why do I have to, so now it was captured. Okay, or it died. So why should I pay back? See, when it comes to shoel, for example, it's interesting. That's where the ba'al of factor is introduced in the case of shoel. It applies to the other cases secondarily, but it's introduced in the case of shoel. Shoel has the most stringent din. That's the best place to put it there. Shoel has the most, that is to say, if the animal dies, the animal has a heart attack and dies. Okay? Now, it's not because of the work factor. It just died. So why do I have to pay? Just because I'm borrowing, why do I suddenly... Or it broke a limb. And it wasn't my fault. It could happen. Both of these things could have happened equally, whether they were at home, you know, or no. What's the difference? Oh, so you must say that there's a assumption of responsibility going on. Right? That's a big responsibility. Oh, I should be responsible. Just because, so you did me, you're a nice guy, you let me use your object. All things being equal, people should let other people use their objects. No loss to me. All right, I'm not, you know. Fine. So you let me use your object. So because of that, look at the stringency over here. Because of that, I become responsible. I become responsible. It's a big responsibility. From a philosophical standpoint, you see, the other way around. If you coming around the other way, what's a bit of a heavy responsibility? Right? Let's assume, for example, it's a car. It's an old car, and the car just breaks down. Not while you're driving it. Because when you're driving it, that's Mesa Machmas Lacha. But just whatever, something. You weren't driving it, and it just, you know, conks out, whatever. Yeah, but you wouldn't have to buy a brand new car, obviously. The shoel would just have to restore what he had or the value. In this case, you just go to the book value, whatever it would cost. But seriously, so one could ask that's the question, well, why? So the answer is because there's an assumption of responsibility. That's the assumption of responsibility. Maybe an exchange for the fact that you're letting me use it, whatever the case may be, but that I would say is very big chiddush. But that is what he's saying. However, that's only where it's ein ba'al of imo. When there was the relationship of ba'al of imo, so then he becomes a shoel and without the assumption of responsibility. To summarize, there are two approaches over here to the concept of Ba'al of Imo. Does Ba'al of Imo modify the entire character of the Shoel arrangement? Or no, it does not. It's the same Shoel arrangement as before. But rather, it has to do with the assumption of responsibilities of the Shomer. That there's a She'ela, that is to say that the responsibility factor does not stem automatically from being a Shoel, from the guy being a Shoel. You see? And there's a certain assumption of responsibility, but in a case of Ba'al of Imo, so he doesn't assume responsibility. Put it a different way, the presence of the Baal exempts him in terms of what? In terms of the assumption of responsibility. That will explain why he doesn't have to be in that walacha, and that will explain why he doesn't have to be there the entire time. Because that has to do with the assumption of responsibility. Once I became a shomer with responsibility, or I became a shomer without responsibility. But once that's it. You see? But now the Gemara says, Abaya Savala Kareb Yoshia. Abaya holds like Rav Yoshia. We're now explaining the other side of Rav Hamnuna, not Rav Hamnuna, our position, how it's arrived at. The position that holds that Ba'al of Imo does not have to be the entire time. And it doesn't have to be Ba'oso Malacha. So Abaya holds like Rav Yoshia. Umataris Lekroi Kerev Yoshia. And he explains the Psukim like Rav Yoshia. Rava Savala Kerev Yonasan. And Rava holds like Rav Yonasan. Umataris Lekroi Kerev Yonasan. So this takes us back to the whole issue of Rav Yoshia and Rav Yonasan. Okay? Basically, the Machlokas was whenever in the Torah, I'm just describing it loosely, you know, how the mechanism of exegesis, of Midrash. Whenever the Torah has two things, this and above, that it doesn't say, oh, it just says this and this, you know, pertaining to a certain halacha. So the question is, do we assume that you have to have both conditions present? For example, if it says if a man curses his father and mother, it just uses the word and. So does that, and with... Does that imply, and he shall be put to death? Does that imply both? That is, he's only put to death if he curses both, because that's what it said, and? Or no, you can assume either both, you can sometimes both, or you can assume, it doesn't have to say either, it doesn't have to say his father or, it doesn't have to say or. The mere vav, the and, can also be taken to mean a man curses his father or mother. It can mean that even though it doesn't say or. All right? That's the machlokas. Okay? So now, with that in mind, Abaya holds like Rav Yoshia, and Rava holds like Rav Yonasan. Abaya sava like Rav Yoshia. Umataris lekroi k'Rav Yoshia. Okay? The pasuk is in Shemos, Chaf Beis, Yud Gimel. V'chi yishal ishmaim re'ehu, v'nishbar omeis. Okay. Ba'al of Ein Imo, Shalim Yishalim. What is it referring to? This verse. It says, V'chi yishal ish ma'im re'ehu, that if a man borrows. So that's referencing the time of borrowing. Okay. V'nishbar omeis is referencing the time of the accident. Okay. Then it says, then that's my... So you have two things. He borrowed, right, and it died, okay, or had a broken limb. Oh, so the law is, if the owners are not with him, okay, shalom yishalom. Now, when it says the owners are not with him, all right, is it referring to both times? Do we assume both times? Okay, and then when it says the owner is with him, do we assume both times? Or no, either one, so to speak. That's basically the approach. All right? So now, let's take a look. Abaya Savala Kerev Yoshia Umataris Lekroi Kerev Yoshia. Abaya explains the psukim according to Rav Yoshia. How so? Ba'al of Ein Imo Shalom Yishalim. If the owner is not with him, then he has to pay. Tama, the reason is, Delese B'Tarvayu. That is, you have to assume he's not with him with both. That is, he's neither with him at the time of borrowing, nor is he with him at the time of the accident. Then, then Shalei Mishteni has to pay. Ha'isa b'chada v'lesa b'chada pater. You have a right to assume then that if he was with him, because the pasuk is now saying, according to the halachic, you know, according to the exegesis, the pasuk is saying, if the owner wasn't with him in both cases, then I have to pay. But by implication, if he was with me in one of those two, then I'd be exempt. Then it says, but it's v'haksiv. Really, if you take a look at the Gaos HaBach, you know, you really shouldn't say v'haksiv, because it's not an objection. It's just a continuation of the discussion. Uchsiv. And it is written, as you continue, im ba'alav imo. Now, the second part, if the owner is with him, lo yishalim. Right? You're going to have to use the same thing. Now, when it says that if the owner is with him, he doesn't pay, the assumption is that he's with him for both, because of the conjunction. Tama de'isei b'tarvayu. The reason why he's exempt is because he is with him for both. Ho emisei b'chadav alesa b'chadav achayav. And the implication is, but if he was only with him for one, right, and not with him for the other, he's chayav, which contradicts the first implication, because the first implication was that as long as he's with him for one, he's exempt. And he's only chayav when he's not with him for both. So the two contradict each other. So you have two contradictory implications. Now here's the conclusion. Lo merlach, to teach you, this is all part of the same exegesis. Hoya imo b'shash she'ela. That is, if he was with him at the time of the... In other words, like this. There's a with him at one time which exempts him, and there's a with him at one time which doesn't exempt him. That's the resolution of the thing. And that resolves the implications. You see? In other words, what you derive from this is that there's an implication that if he was only with him for one, then it's, right? In other words, there's one implication that if he's only with him for one, he's exempt, right? Then there's another implication that if he's only with him for one, he's not exempt. And that's true, because since there are two places, the resolution is that if he was with him at this one, he's exempt. If he was with him, he wasn't at that one, but he was with him at the other one, then he's not exempt. That's the final resolution. Now it's only a question of deciding which is the key. Which is the key point at which the Balav has to be with him. So at this point in time, the Gemara is going to state, well, that if he was with him at the time of the She'ela, even though he's not with him at the time of the accident. On the other hand, if he was with him at the time of the accident, it's not enough if he wasn't with him at the time of the She'ela. On the next page, the Gemara will ask, well, how do you know? Why not say the other one is the significant one? But that's not our problem right now. You see, in other words, you can see through the exegesis how they've established that the being with him from the Psukim, okay? There's a being with him for one which exempts him, and there's a being with him for one which doesn't exempt him. Now you just have to decide which is the key. So at this point in time, the Gemara is going according to the conclusion that the key being with him which exempts is the one of the time of the She'ela. On the next page, the Gemara will take that up. And for why? Why did you say the other one was more significant? But that doesn't matter for us now. So that's the Lomula Choy Ima B'Sha She'ela, to teach you that if he was with him at the time of the She'ela, Eino Tzarech Lios Ima B'Sha Shvur Umesa. He does not have to be with him at the time of the accident. Hoya Imo B'Sha Shvur Umesa. You see, if he was with him at the Sha Shvur Umesa, then he must be with him at the time of the She'ela. Okay? That's the way Abaya learns. And that is the exegesis, which is contrary to the exegesis of Rav Hamnuna. Rava, we continue now with Rava. Tzadik Vav Amin Aleph. Rava Sava like Rav Yonasan. Rava holds like Rav Yonasan. And take a look at Rashi before you launch. The Yoma who says, Echad, Echad, Mashma. Umataret drasha dekroy Rav Yonasan. Lemidrash kihani masnisan dilel. Okay? So he holds that when it uses the and can mean both together, or it can mean each one separate. It doesn't have to mean necessarily both together. Ba'olav imo. Really, it's... You should leave out the word the Tanya, because we're not doing a brisa here. It's Rava. Rava is an Amora. Okay, anyways, this is how he learns. Im ba'olav imo lo yishalim. That's the latter half of the pasuk. Mashma de'isi b'tarvayu. That implies that he's there for both points. Umashmanami dechiisi bechada velase bechada pata. It also implies that if he's with him at one point and not with him with one point, he's exempt. Okay. Uchsiv balav eini mo shalim yishalim. And the first part of the pasuk, if it says that he's not with balav eini mo, he's not with him, he has to pay. Mashma delesi b'tarvayu. Implication is that he's not there for both. Umashmanami dechiisa bechada velase bechada chayev. It also implies that if he's with him for one, and you know, not with him for one, he's chayev. Lo malach, that is to teach you. Hoye imo b'shash eila, and tzarach lios imo b'shash furu mesa. That is, if he was there at the time of the sheila, he doesn't have to be at the time of the accident. Hoye imo b'shash furu mesa, if he was there at the time of the accident, tzarach lios imo b'shash eila. They reach the same conclusion. It's just a different mechanism of exegesis, but it doesn't matter because it's the same basic idea. In this case, it won't make a difference because you have the same contradiction. That is, you have two different implications with regard to the din of Ba'olav Imo from the psukim emerging. One is that implication is that it's only if he's there at both points, and one is that it's one point is sufficient. So you have to make a decision and resolution. And the resolution is, as we've said, that it contains two different points of emo, two different possibilities of emo. Okay? That's what the Pesukim are saying. One is the point of the Sheila itself, the other point is the point of the accident, and the resolution is, this is what the Pesukim are telling you, that being with him works if it's the time of the Sheila, but doesn't work if it's the time of the accident. And not being with him is a problem if the not being with him is at the time of the Sheila. But the not being with him at the time of the accident is not a problem. That's the resolution. Okay? Basically, we've then established that the psukim, the pasuk, is establishing the idea of ba'olav imo, that it's an exemption, and the exemption is when he was with him. And with him is defined purely by being with him at the time of the she'ela, not by the time of the accident. Now the Gemara is going to challenge that. No one's challenging the exegesis, that it's correct, and that that's correct resolution, according to both sides. And that conclusion that there is the conclusion that he doesn't have to be there for both, and that one is sufficient, that we agree. However, the Gemara, as you might have yourself noticed at the time, there were two possible choices, but the Gemara, up to this point, both of them seem to think that the appropriate one should be the time of the Sheila, and not the time of the accident. Now the Gemara is challenging that. Let's reverse it. What do you mean reverse it? In other words, let's make the other time the time of the accident. That should be the key, and the time of the Sheila shouldn't be the key. What made you conclude that? That's what the Gemara is asking. The Gemara answers, Mistavra. It makes more sense. The reason why we came to this conclusion is because it's more logical. Sheila Adifa. Sheila is more significant. That is, it makes more sense if you have to choose between the two to say that the factor of Ba'olav Imo as an exemption is going to be determined by the time of the Sheila. Mishum the Kamaisi Lea Lirshuse, because he brings it into his Rishus. That's the time at which he brings it into his Rishus. Now, according to the way I explained before, and he brings it into his Rishus, and that's when he assumes responsibility. I mean, that's so then it makes sense. That's the time. At the time when he takes it into his Rishus and assumes responsibility. That's the time where if that feature is present, the owners are present at that point in time, so that's it, I don't assume responsibility. Now Gemara says, no, Adarabba, Shfuru Mesa Difa. Why don't you say the opposite? See, this is a battle now, probing. From a logical standpoint, maybe the time of accident is more significant. Shekein Chayev, Beyonsen. Because that's when he becomes Chayev in the accident. That's the time of liability. Until now, nothing happened. It's at the time of the accident, and the accident is the key feature. Then, shouldn't we say, that's the time when he should be with him, and that would cause the exemption. That should be the time. Right? So Rashi says, Al osa shoa mischayevu. At that time, it becomes, that's when the chiyuv sets in. The question is, when should the factor of Baal Avimo be appropriate? When he takes it into his rishus? Or no, at the time when the chiyuv is established. There's no chiyuv established until the accident occurs. It seems to be in line with what I'm saying, because what they're saying is, if that the time of this other side that's arguing it should be the time of the accident, that it's a regular shayla like any other shayla. Right? Because when I took it and I used it, I wasn't using it with the Balaam. It's a regular shayla. Except, it has to do with the responsibilities for accidents, because at the time of the accident, he was there. If he was there, then I don't assume responsibilities. It's the assumption of responsibility. The only question is, now, we're all agreeing that the relationship of the owner removes the assumption of responsibility. But when does it make sense to apply it? When those responsibilities are going to set in? That is the accident? Or no? From the time when he becomes a shoel in the first place. That would be the key. That's the definitive point. So then the Gemara says, but Yilo She'ela, Shfur Umesa, Mayavid. It's true that the Chiyav sets in at the time of the accident, but if it wasn't for the She'ela, so then there wouldn't be a Chiyav from the accident. That Chiyav stems from something. It stems from the fact that I became the shomer, that's when I assume responsibility. It may not manifest itself. Okay? And the other side says, no, v'ilav shfura mesa, but if it didn't have the accent, she'ela mayavid, then what would be the relevance of the she'ela? Okay, so it's two different points. I don't know if we have anything further there on that. Then the Gemara says, no, afilu hachi she'ela difa. The Gemara comes to a decisive conclusion that She'ela, the time of the She'ela is more significant. Meaning to say, the principle of Ba'ala of Imo, which modifies, in my opinion, the element of responsibility of the Shomer, it makes more sense to say that this should apply when, at the time of the She'ela. She'kein chayev b'mzon oseha. Because at that point in time, he becomes obligated in the mizonos. He becomes obligated in the food. He has to feed the animal. Okay? So, what? Well, basically, the shoel is obligated to feed the animal. That's his expense. So the Gemara is saying, because of that, when does that kick in? At the time of the she'ela. So because of that factor, it's more logical to say that the Baal Avimo factor. Okay? I think, basically, simply, it's saying that it has to do with the assumption of responsibility, with chiyuvim, and all the chiyuvim. That's the time when the chiyuvim devolve upon him. Ashi said differently. In other words, we have two versions now in terms of why they both agree that the time of the she'ela is more logical. One side said because that's the time when he assumes responsibilities, so that should be the time, the factor. Rav Ashi amakra. Rav Ashi says the pasuk itself indicates that. Because it says, v'chiyishal, when he bara, ish, v'chiyishalish me'im re'ehu, okay, v'lo re'ehu imo, shalim yishalim. It's implied in the words. Rashi, Ravashiyam mikro gufe mashma. The idea is implied in the very structure of the psukim. Dasha she'ela kapid, that the Torah was concerned about the time of the she'ela. The me'im re'ehu, it says, Yishalish me'im re'ehu, from mashma lo re'ehu atzmo. It's mashma, it implies, but not the owner, not the friend himself, is nishalo. Okay? V'ola masikra shalim yishalim. The very structure of the words implies that he borrowed the object from him, but not the owner himself. Implying, it's an implication, nothing more than an implication, that's when he has to pay. So that's talking about the time of the she'ela. Okay? So what he's saying is that the structure of the psukim indicate the idea. Alma ashas she'ela k'peda koi. Re'eu imo, but if the re'eu is with him, putter, he's exempt. Hihachi ba'olav ein imo. Saying, if that's the case, then you're telling me that you can learn it out from the structure of the words. that if a man should borrow from his friend, meaning that the object is separated from the friend, but not the friend himself. Okay, so in the structure of those words, there's an implication that if he were to borrow the friend, then he'd be exempt. So then why does the Torah have to elucidate and spell it out? Then it goes on to say, if the owner is with him, if the owner is not with him, he pays. The owner doesn't pay. So the need for that would imply that you can't derive it from the structure. You can't have it both ways. If you're telling me that I could deduce it from those words, then why does the Torah have to spell it out? Now, the Torah doesn't waste words. So therefore, since the Torah then goes on to make it very clear that if the owner is not with him, he has to pay. And if the owner is with him, he's exempt. That would imply that from the opening phrase, if a man should borrow from his friend, it doesn't carry any implication as far as that's concerned, as you want to, and you're reading in, pretty much. You want to read in an implication. But if that implication was there, then we wouldn't need the latter part of the pasuk. The Gemara says, Ilav hanoch havamina hai urche dekrohu. Were it not for this, I would have thought that this is the style, that it's a stylistic thing. What does it mean? It means that there's two kinds of implication. The implication is not strong enough to stand on its own. So I need further verification. There's an implication in those words that there's a difference between borrowing the owner with and borrowing without. There is an implication. But it's not strong enough to stand on its own. One could say that that's the style. It needs to be more definitive. However, once you have the second factor, which makes it more definitive, then you can use the first one as a modifier. We're using it as a modifier, you see. Because the second one then establishes if the owner is with him, then he's exempt. The owner is not with him, then he's obligated. Right? And now that we know that, okay, so then for the implication of which time, whether it's the time of She'elah or whether it's the time of the accident, then we could use it. You can't say it's Urche Dekra anymore because that it's the style of the pasuk. You can't say that anymore because we now have confirmation that this is a reality. That the idea of a borrowing with an owner, without an owner, is a reality. So now that we have that, we can go back and derive secondary things from it. You see? So that question's been answered. Your question was, what do you have to have the statement if the owner is with him? If the owner's not with him, let's derive it. You couldn't derive it from just the structure of the pasuk because it's insufficient. One could say that that's just the structure of the pasuk. So you need more. Okay, so then it has to state it outright. Once you state it outright, so now looking back to the first words, we know that it's not style anymore because there is a reality to that distinction, and then we can learn things from it. Take a look at Rashi, Ilav Hanach. If it were not for this, the Hadaru Parish Milsa Tvei, that the Torah proceeded to explain the matter good, well, clear, Lo Havim Motzinu L'Melech, then I couldn't have derived from those words, Me'im Re'eu V'lo Re'eu Atzmo. You could have said that that's simply a stylistic phenomenon. Veloshna bevalam, veloshna below balam. And there's no real distinction between the two. It's arbitrary. There's no real distinction between balamimo and not balamimo. Veloshna below balam chayev. Vahashta the gully seifa, but now that the seifa revealed to us. Dibi Balam Pater, that with Balam is Pater, the Echad bin Nayuka Pater, and only one of them did he exempt Velo al Chavirta, but not the other one, Yalfina mean a Gilui Milsa. So then you can go back and learn, a Gilui Milsa means an implication, something that reveals something about it. The Asha Ashela Kuppet, that is really, really concerned about Asha Ashela. We'll continue now in the Gemara Daf Tzadik Vav Amud Aleph. Boi Rami Bar Chama. Rami Bar Chama asked, Shalal Leriva Mahu. This is obviously an unusual case. Rashi says, Hu Atzmo? That he borrowed the animal for bestiality purposes of engaging with the animal in bestiality. One can ask questions over here. Because this constitutes a avera for which yichayev misa. So then, are you allowed to lend the person? Are you allowed to make such a shela? Are you allowed to lend your animal for purposes of l'riva? if you're going to say that the owner did not know, had he known, he would never have lent it out. So then that's a mekach tov, so to speak. It's not a mekach, but it's the same. I would imagine that if you lend, let's say you want to borrow an object, a car, whatever it is, and a person says, well, what for? I don't just give it out for anything. He only gives it out for special purposes, for something which he regards as significant. So let's say you lie to him, and you borrow it, and you lend it, you use it for something else. So is that, what is that? Is that geneva? That's geneva, because he didn't lend it to you. You're just using his object without rishus. And you deceived him in terms of, so it's not a real rishus. A question arises, like, what's the context of the Gemara's question? Is it a question in Shoel per se, whether this constitutes Sheela, or no? It definitely constitutes Sheela, but it's a question with regard to the issue of Balavimo. So take a look at the Meiri, who says, HaShoel es ha-parah, shelo l'mlacha. One who borrows the para, not from Malacha. V'shala b'valam. And he borrowed it with the owners. Elisha ba'alam she'ulin lo le'eza malacha. But the animal is borrowed for some malacha. V'ulo shal it's a para l'malacha. But he didn't borrow the animal for malacha. K'gon she'shala l'riva. Oh, le'hisros ba ka'ashir. Oh, sheshala lasos ba pachas misheva pruta she'ein zeh kari malacha. Oh, sheshal shtei paros lasos bein shtein sheva pruta shavu b'sheyesh kam pruta eitz la shoel v'eitz la mashal mikol makam ein kam pruta eitz la para. Kol elu safek im nikru she'ela bivalam im la v'donin ba kulo l'nitva v'im tafas halah im osim yada. Basically, what the Meiri is saying that this is purely a question with regard to the concept of Ba'al Avimo. However, Rashi is not learning that way, because Rashi says, Mahu, Mechayev Bionsea, Olo. Is he Chayev in Onsen? What does that mean? Because a Shoel is Chayev for Onsen. So, does he have the status of being a Shoel altogether? So, that's the simple way of learning the question. Of course, we have to ask, what's that issue over here? Why not? What's the difference? What does that have to do with anything? Mahu. We'll start off by trying to do it according to Rashi. So the Gemara says, Kedeshai liyinshi ba'inon. Olahachi lo shai liyinshi. Do we require that it be as people borrow? It's not an animal. People don't. This is a very unusual situation, obviously. As we've said, it's an avera. We're not getting into those issues. Well, we're not getting into those issues of whether it's permitted to do so. If the owner knows, obviously he's not permitted to do so, to give his animal for such a purpose. But the Gemara apparently is not interested in that issue. Let's say it was done. For whatever reason, he did it. Maybe he didn't know. He didn't know that he's not allowed to, whatever the case may be. And he borrowed it for that purpose. So the Gemara here is not interested in that. It's interested in whether this constitutes, now the animal was killed or whatever the case may be, died, shvura, shvuya, mesa, so now there's a shoel chayev anak, because the shoel is chayev for onsen. So one side says, kiddushar liyinshi be'inan, ulahachi lo shar liyinshi. That's one side. O dilma, or no, tama mai, mishum hana. The reason for what? The reason for the chiyah for the onsen is because of hanah. V'hai nami ho'isle hanah. And this case also has hanah. That's hanah. That's what he wants the animal for, so he's getting the benefit. However perverted it is, it doesn't matter with regard to the issue of hanah. So that's the question, mahu. We're trying to think of an illustration that would correspond to the case. For example, if you are borrowing a library book, well, I mean, today's law, we're talking America, obviously, they don't work by halachic standards. So they just go by practicality. But we're making up our own library. Where you have a right to borrow books because you're a resident or whatever is required. And the assumption is you're borrowing the book to read. That's the function that it's being borrowed for. Now, what about borrowing it for a completely accidental purpose? Like you're going to swat a fly. Or whatever. Use it to support something. Put something on top of it.
So is that okay? Would that could you borrow the book? Are you considered to be a shoel? So what does that mean? That means that it's not just that you have right to take the book and do whatever you want. The she'ela is related to certain tashmishim. That an object has tashmishim. An object has uses, and there's an objective category that it's... Now, an object can have more than one use, but the she'ela is transferring to you the right of usage. That's k'dashai le'inshi. I mean, that makes it into a objective thing. So, let's say it's tools. Let's say we had, instead of a library for books, there was a tool shed for the public where you could borrow tools. So it's possible that a particular tool could have more than one uses. But then that's what the arrangement revolves around that. What makes you into a shoel is that you've acquired the right of the object for a particular tashmish. But outside of that, you don't have the right. You're not a shoel. That's one way of looking at it. That makes a lot of sense. According to that, so shoel l'rivo wouldn't be a shoel altogether. In terms of you couldn't call him a shoel. That's not a shoel. Exactly. He's not using the animal in terms of the ordinary usage of a cow. So then that would make him a shoel. That's what the she'ela for the object constitutes, stands for. The other side is saying that it works differently. It really is not related to the ordinary usage, but rather it's sort of two steps, that you obtain a certain right. It's sort of like the right of the owner to the usage. And as long as there's a usage that you're deriving hanah, that renders you into a shoel. Any hanah that stems from the tashmish of the object would render the guy into a shoel. Even if it's not the ordinary one that it exists for, the designated one, so to speak. But the essence of a shoel is simply that you obtain the object and you derive a hanah from the object. Once you derive a hanah from the object, so then even though that's not the hanah that the object stands for, this is something purely subjective, it doesn't make any difference. So the question basically would be, would it be the objective hanah that the object stands for? Or no, it doesn't matter. As long as you use the object in a certain way to produce hanah for yourself, so that makes you chayev b'yonzin. All right, continuing along these lines, now the next question is, shala le'ro'os ba, that he borrowed it to be looked at in a certain way. Take a look at Rashi. She'ehe nira ashir, choshev. V'lo yimshchu balibatim yudein mimenu la'kifo ba'mana u v'ashroi. To extend him credit, whatever, Rashi's just giving you an illustration. It doesn't really matter. There are reasons why a person wants to appear wealthy. He wants people to look at him in a certain way. People treat wealthy people differently. Or he wants to get investors and so on. So you got to make an impression. Okay, so a person borrowed an object not to use it at all. What's the question? This is distinct from the first question. Mahu. Mamona ba'inan v'ho'ika. Do we require mamon? And we have it. It's an object of value. And that's all that matters. Well, this is one step removed. Yeah. That is to say that, he's not deriving any benefit from the monetary value, except there's an indirect benefit, but it's not a monetary utilization of the object. That he's not using it. In the first case, there's usage, so there's hanah. I guess it's Shava Pruta also, whatever, whether that's required or not, it doesn't matter. But in this case, there's no utilization of the object. Take a look at Tosfos. Mamona be'inon v'yoika. Pirish. The mamona be'inon sheyashelo. That the we require that he lends him literally money, but it means an object which has monetary value. V'yoika. V'isle nami hanoa mine. And he also derives hanoa from it. That would appear to be the explanation of the next case, where it's pachas mishava pruta, in which case you have both elements. You have money and you have hanoa. So what's unique about this? Our case, about leiros, it would appear that what? What's lacking over here? That's the problem. Mamona de isle hanoa mine. He's not deriving hanoa from it. That's the problem. He's not deriving hanoa. Why is he not deriving hanoa? Because he's not using it. Okay, so if that's the case, so what's the question? Look at Rashi on the words Odilma Mamona de Isle Hanoa Mine Shenehne Bivehema Atzma. That is Nana from the Behema itself. Take a look at Tosos, Mamona de Mishani Mine, Pirish, Shemishtameshbo. That he uses it. So Tosos and Rashi are saying the same thing. If there was no Hana at all, then there would be nothing to talk about. There is Hana, because I'm getting a benefit out of it. But I'm not using the object. It's not usage. To give a rough analogy, Hanukkah is coming up. It's also l'shtamish l'ora. That's why you have the shamish. The reason for the shamish is that because these neros are designated to be the ner Hanukkah. So you're not allowed to use them for anything else. You break them from their designation. So you can't just sit there and read a book by the light of the Hanukkah light. So the idea of the shamish is to provide another source of illumination, so you won't be over. Today we have, generally speaking, we have a light on in the room, so you don't even need a shamish. Now, but let's say you simply enjoy the fact that the light is on. Is that us or two? When we say you can't be mishtame, that to be nehene from the lights, there's a difference between being mishtamish, between using something, and simply being nene from it. That is, if a person, if a person sits in the room, that's the whole point, is to look at them, lirosam bilvad. But if a person just derives a certain enjoyment from the fact that there's a light in a room, he's not using it though. It just makes him feel good. That's not prohibited. Not prohibited because there's no utilization. There's no. It's an accidental phenomenon that he enjoys it. That's the question with regard to Shoel. Again, is that an essence of the essence of the Sheela is the hishtamsh to be mishtamish with the object, and. Because he has the right to be mishtamish with the object, so that's kolanar shalo. But the hana we're talking about has to result from the hishtamshus. Because that's a hishtamshus of the object is a right of ownership, and I'm transmitting that to you, and now you're actually using my object. So that makes you a shoel, and then you chayav v'yonsin. But that's the question. What if I'm giving you my object? You see, I'm giving you my object, but you're not going to really use it. So, all right, you're going to benefit from it, but you're not going to really use it. So that's the shiloh over here. Does it matter what the benefit is? Is it because the benefit, are we talking about a benefit which is intrinsic in the object or something accidental? That's the question over here. That I'm nene, but I'm not nene because I'm using your object. I'm nene purely accidentally. That is because the object is in my location, so people look at me a different way. But that's not a utilization of the object. Or do we say that no, that it really doesn't matter, that I'm transferring the object to you, and for you it becomes an object of value, and you're deriving value from it. So if the fact is that you're deriving a value because of my object, so then that makes you into a shoel. But if the issue is that you're deriving value because of the utilization, that's what I'm giving to you, the right to use the object. That's the two sides. We're continuing now with the series of questions in the Gemara, pertaining to Shoel. The first question, just to review, was Shaala Lariva. The way we explained it was that there are certain, so to speak, objective uses for which an object is designated, and that is, Shaila is sort of a transfer of ownership with regard to the privilege of the usages. So that's what Rashi says. It's the lo Shaila Inchi. We're in line with what's the Gemara. The Gemara says that this is not a usage which is designated for Shaila. A person doesn't borrow the object for that purpose. So that's the question. Is that would that then be considered a Shaila? Now, in these cases, the second case is not the... Well, let's ask ourselves a question. The second case is the case where the person borrows it, but not to use it, but just to so to speak, to have it. To have it. Because of an extraneous factor. That is, so people will give him credit. They'll assume that he has a certain status. The issue in terms of the second case, that one borrows something to give the appearance of wealth in order to get credit. The Gemara is not really taking up the issue of whether it's Kenevas Das. We're not really taking up the issue of whether one should do that or is permitted to do that, to give people a false impression. To give people a false impression is Kenevas Das. To get money from them on that basis seems to be problematical. But we're not concerned about that. We just want to know in terms of the din, does he have a din of Shoel? Questions being raised. First of all, one can... But the Gemara over here is talking about, you see, it's interesting. So why is the Gemara talking about the idea that he wants to get credit? Because a suggestion is being brought up now. What about if you're having a party and you borrow something, whatever, some kind of decoration or something, in order to make it look good and so on. But you're just doing it for entertainment. You're not doing it for credit. And I lend it to you. And it's just that it makes it more pleasant and enjoyable. Why isn't the Gemara asking that? Why the question then arises, in such a case it would not be unethical. There's nothing wrong with that. I can, either the people know that I borrowed or even they don't know that I borrowed. What's the difference? I'm not under an obligation to tell anybody if I borrowed some nice tablecloth or something like that. Well, that's already being used. That's not a good example. We're talking about things that are not being used. We're talking about things that are just there, because their presence there enhances the situation. Now, it's definitely possible to construe it in a way where it would not, you wouldn't have to have that factor that people will give me a credit. So, if that's the case, what would be the halacha in a situation like that? Why is it the same thing? If it is the same thing, so why is the Gemara giving the case of Le'ro'os, and the explanation that's being given is Shehein Nira Ashir, that he wants to appear like a wealthy person, Chashuv, V'lo Yimshchu Balabatim Yedehen Mimenu, Lakifu Ba'amono Uvi Ashroi, that the people will be willing to extend credit to him. Now, obviously, that's significant in the world of business. That's just the reality. You got to have a certain look. The issue of Gnevas Das is where there's a falsification factor. But forget about that for a second. What about the point that's been raised, where you borrow, let's say, is the Gemara asking that question? If you borrow a painting to just put it on the wall, is that what kind of a shomer is that? Also, one other factor. In the case of Lariva, where it's a suffix, the other side of the coin, in other words, there's only two possibilities. Either he'll be considered a Shoel and Chayef Onsen, or he'll be considered a Shomasacha. But why? If he's not a Shoel, why is he being a Shomasacha? A good example would be like when you borrow flowers. Today they have like organizations that make a dinner, whatever it is, and tzedakah, they give them, so you could borrow the flowers, and then you return them. Or it could be like the artificial, not the flowers. So it makes a nice centerpiece. It's just there for it to beautify the place. But there's no real usage and so forth. So it makes it nicer. It lends some prestige to the event. Question is, what would that be? Is that also part of the question here, or that's different? What would you say? Here the Gemara is not asking us that question, whether that's the normal thing that people borrow it for. Apparently the Gemara is not troubled by that, because that could be the Kiddush Eileen, and sometimes people do that. See, the first case was that that's not what people don't borrow it for that. That's you see, because that's a perverse thing, obviously. So nobody borrows it for that. The second case, the Gemara is not saying that nobody borrows it for that. You can borrow it for that. That's not the problem. The question is that a show-up? Well, it's being suggested that, a painting, that's what it's for. So that's if people lend it, it's Kiddush Eileinim. That's what they lend it for. So therefore, you're saying that but in this particular case, that's not the question, though. So why couldn't this be the example of... you're saying there's no question whatsoever? So why is... The problem with Leiros is not that that's why... that's not the problem. The problem there is not what people borrow it for. The assumption is that that's all right. That fits that category. It says the problem over here is that it's Mamona. It is Mamona. But it's Mamona, the Islay... That's what we said yesterday. He's not really utilizing it. There's no utilization going on. And that's what Tosva says. Shemishtamishbo. Let's say you have a museum and you borrow artworks. And then people come and you make money. You have a show. So that I would say is the same thing as Les Rose. But if you borrow some art because you're having a group over to your house and, you know, it's just going to be nice, but you're not charging money for it, that's the question. I would, in the second case, the issue, in my opinion, is there must be a benefit. There must be a tangible hana. You've got to have the hana factor. And, I assume we're going to see whether the Hanah has to be a Shavapruta or not. But let's put that aside. That's not the issue at this point in time. In the case of the Rose, you're talking about a tangible benefit that he derives from the object or as a result of the object, but not through the utilization of the object. That's the question over there. Is the essence of the Hanah, because it's called Hanah Shalom, is the essence of the Hanah that the Shoel derives, is that because he has the rights of Tashmish? Or no? The mere fact that he has it in his possession. But there must be a resultant Hana. There must be a Hana. So what's the Hana? The Hana is that that's something important. That he gets credit. That's a business thing. That's very important in business. That you can now conduct business, I mean, that's really a tangible thing. Obviously. Yeah. In this day and age, I mean, if your credit is cut off, you can't function. So you need credit. My question is, the fact that you're hanging, that it's there and it makes things more pleasant, is that considered a hana? That is, there's no utilization. And what's the hana? Oh, did I enjoy it? Well, I mean, then the question is going to be, is that really Hanoah? I mean, it's Hanoah in the halachic sense. The fact that it makes you feel better, I don't know if that's considered to be Hanoah. You see, it's got to be something which is tangible. We're not just saying any Hanoah. We're saying something which is, practically speaking, is a real benefit. A monetary benefit. So, if it's a museum, and you sell tickets, and you're making money off of it, that's the case. That would be like Les Rose. That's for sure would be that question. But then the other side would be, but that's not considered Tashmish. Now, what you've suggested, that no, but that is Tashmish. He's saying, but what do you mean? That's because we're not dealing with a work of art. But what about if something is a work of art, which is designed to be looked at? So let's say that that is real Tashmish. That's what Michael is arguing. question is now being raised. Let's say you borrow, someone has a scarecrow, and you just put it up, and it scares away the crows. Is that tashmish? I would say that that's not tashmish. Tashmish is when there's a function and it's being used in a functional way. Just because it achieves a result, but that result has nothing to do with the functioning. It's just that there's other things out there that when they see it, that's not a use. In common parlance, we would say, in ordinary language, we would say, I'm using it. Because that we mean that I'm getting the effect of it. Okay? But you could say, however, hold on a second. You could say this, however. The scarecrow could be similar to the case of Les Rose. Because you have a business or whatever, you have a field and it's necessary. So you're saving money. So that's not tashmish, but that's monetary value. You see, it's mamona. That factor would be similar to Les Rose because it's functioning in terms that's providing you with a monetary benefit. That's exactly what the question is focusing in on. A monetary benefit that accrues to you, but not from any tashmish in the chefza. So if there's no tashmish in the chefza, unless it's made to be used. You see, if it's a functioning object and it moves around, whatever it is, like a tractor or whatever the case is. So then there's tashmish of the chefza. That's not tashmish of the chefza, in my opinion. That's not tashmish of the chefza if it just happens to be there. And other things won't come there. Because it's not being used. In terms of the art, I would say that's not tashmish. That is not considered a tashmish because it's not functioning. We're talking about an object which has a function, and when it functions, it produces certain results. Here, it doesn't function. You know, superficially, it appears that way. That it's just there, and people are looking at something, and there's an effect upon people when they look at it, but there's no tashmish. You're not using an object. So that would not even be, in my opinion... In my opinion, that would not be a shoel at all. That's why the Gemara does not take up that case. I could be wrong. And as we go further, we may discover. But at this point in time, I would say that if I borrow, we're talking about borrowing to use. If I borrow a work of art, and I'm not going to use it at all. It's just going to hang. Not for money, though. Not for money, because I like to look at it. I enjoy it. Relaxes me. Then I would say he would have the din of a Shomer Sacha. Well, it's even questionable about Shomer Sacha, but that's not Shoel. Not Shoel. Because there's no Mamona. There's no Mamona. You see, it must produce a benefit. It must produce a benefit. And there's no benefit being produced. There's no monetary point. It's just that I happen to enjoy it. But I'm not using it. So the Hanoa comes Mamela. Gemara is having a hard time, even the case with Leiros, because there's no Tashmish. But there is a benefit. There's a tangible benefit. But it doesn't stem from the utilization of the object. So if you don't have that, if you don't have a tangible benefit, and you don't have utilization, so then it's not a show. I just had a thought. A Shomer Chinam, as you know, a Shomer Chinam is not allowed to use it. Okay, and as soon as he uses it, he's Chai for Onsen. Same is true with the Shomer Sacha, but let's keep with the Shomer Chinam. So let's say you entrusted the Shomer Chinam to guard something, alright? But it's the kind of a thing which he could be used Le Rose, which makes you look prestigious. Okay? So then... Now, you know that once the Shomer Chinam uses the object, he's chayiv now for everything, like a shoel, because he has no right to use it. Let's say, at first, he became a Shomer Chinam, that's it. Then he realized that he's in a situation where this could help him, Leiro's factor. So he invites people over. And he gets the Leiro's benefit. Would that now render him chayiv for onsen? Well, you could say it all depends on this chakira. If we say over here that sha'ala le'ro'os is considered to be she'ela, So then you might say, well, the Shem Achinam now is... but I would say that even if you say, I'm going to say it a different way, even if you should say that Shaul Alei Ra'os is considered Shoel, nevertheless, in the case of a Shem Achinam, where it started out as a Shem Achinam, and then later on it became Le Ra'os, you could still argue that he's still a Shem Achinam. Even so, I would say that by a Shem Achinam, when we say, he has to swear that the Lo Shalach Bo Yad, that's what it says, Lo Shalach Bo Yad, that it means he's not going to be penalized if he got some benefit out of it. Because if that benefit comes accidentally, so it comes accidentally. That does not change his status of being a Shem Achinam. Because when he contracted to be a Shem Achinam. Now, if people come over and accidentally they think that it's his and he gains from it, that's not a violation. It's L'sholach Bayad. When he has to change the nature of the situation. He didn't have any right. That's the point. He had no right to use it, according to the terms of the... Okay? He had no right. There clearly you'd have to have Tashmish. And to summarize, even if we should say that Shaula Le'Rose is considered She'ela, and he hasn't been Shoel, nevertheless, I would say that this would not affect the status of a Shem Achinam who started out just guarding the object, and then later on got some benefit accidentally. That's not a violation. That's still considered to be that he was not Shaleich Bayad. The fact that a Shomer Chinam would accidentally get some benefit out of it would not change the character of the Shmira. Even though, if we should say that this is a Shoel, even though if things L'chatchila started out that way, he borrowed it, he'd have the status of a Shoel. Still, if originally he had the shame of a Shomer Chinam, the fact that he now exploits it for his own purposes, I don't think that would make him into a Shoel. Because there is Shalach Bayad. The reason why he's going to be a Shem Asacha is if he's not a Shoel, he's clearly a Shomer. Because he assumed responsibility for the object. That's for sure. The only question is the nature of the Hana, does it categorize him as being a Shoel? Okay. But as far as Shem Asacha is concerned, that's different. If you should say that it's not, that he's not a Shoel, so he's a Shomer, but the difference between a Shem Achinam and a Shem Asacha is that the Shem Achinam is not deriving any benefit from the Shmira. And the Shem Asacha is deriving benefit. Now, of course, you could question what I just said and say, well, if that's the case, he's deriving benefit. So then when the Shem Achinam starts to derive benefit from the object, why shouldn't his din change to being a Shem Asacha? To recapitulate, what makes him a Shem Asacha is the fact that he's getting something in exchange. So then we don't care that he's using the object. He's not allowed to use the object. The Shem Asacha is not allowed to use the object. But he's not being the Shmira is not a favor. He's being Shomer for monetary benefit. He's getting something in return. So that makes him into a Shem Asacha. So here the Gemara says, clearly he'll be a Shem Asacha. Now, my question is like this though, so why don't you say, back to what I said, that if he started as a Shem Achinam, and then he begins to get benefits from it, secondary benefits, I said he doesn't become a Shoel. But why doesn't he become a Shem Asacha? Because now he's getting benefits. The answer is that in the case of the Shoel, when the person borrowed it for that benefit, for Le'ros benefit, so that's a question, technically speaking, whether that renders him into a Shoel of Kolon Ashalo or someone, but he can't be a Shem Achinam because he's not watching it for free. The transaction was rooted in a benefit. The only question is that benefit sufficient to give him a din of Shoel? But if it's not, so then it's still the Shmira was undertaken for a benefit. So that's a Shomer Sachar. However, if the Shmira was undertaken as a Shem Achinam, and then accidentally, the Shomer accrues benefits. That doesn't matter. That's has nothing to do with between me and you. I agreed to guard it for free. So that's like that could happen very often. I agreed to guard the object for free, and I did so. And as a result of that, something great happened to me. Somebody saw it. They thought it was whatever, and I got tremendous benefit as a result. That doesn't change the character of the Shmira. So the character of the Shmira was one in which I agreed to God for free. That's the difference. That's why he won't become a Shem Asacha. He won't become a Shoel, and he won't become a Shamasacha if he started out that way. Now we go on to the next two cases. Now the Gemara says, Shoel o lasos ba pachos mepruta. Mahu. Let's say he borrowed it to do malacha, so you have all the factors. That's kedeshaylin and inchi, it's the normal thing, and he's doing, but it's minimal. It's less than a sheva pruta. Mahu. What do we say? Mamona be'inon ve'ika. Mamona is required, and we do. Odilma kol pachas, we have mamon here. Odilma kol pachas mepruta lo klumi. Okay? Now, these last two questions, there's a succession. First, they're two connected questions. Now we're saying that, you know, these are the elements. You have to have Tashmish HaChavtza, and you have to have Mamona. But what about if it's not a Sheva Pruta? That's question A. Question B, we'll just state it right now. Question B is saying, let's assume, question B depends upon how you resolve question A, obviously. Okay? If you say, of course, that question A, that if it's less than a Sheva Pruta, so it's nothing, so forget about it, nothing to talk about. But if you say that you require a Sheva Pruta, what about a situation where he borrows two objects? Shal shtei paros. Let's say he borrowed two animals. Lasos behen pruta. To do with them a pruta. What does that mean? That means combination. Let's assume half a pruta with each one. Okay? Mahu. What do we say? Mi amrino and zil bosa shoel umashal. Do we say that we go by after the shoel and the mashal? Ve'ika. What does that mean? You have to understand also that this is one transaction. We're not talking about it's one owner, one borrower, and in the transaction I'm borrowing two objects, which combined will add up to a pruta. So do we go after Shor Lamashel, Ve'ika, Odilma Zilbas Aparos, or do we measure it in terms of the object, V'chol Chad V'chad Elekim Mamona, and each one is lacking in Mamon. So that's a succession. First question is, do you need mamon or you don't need mamon? I mean, mamon you have, but do you need sheva pruta? If you tell me that you do need sheva pruta, so I have a further question. Let's say it's distributed among two different objects. Where I'm continuing the discussion in Bava Metzia, the Ibayas, on Daf Tzadik Vav Amud Aleph, assuming that in order to be rendered into a shoel, kol hanoah shelo, is chayef haonsin, it means that he has the right to utilize the object. Now, the utilization must have monetary value. Now the Gemara asks a question. Let's assume it does, but it's less than a Sheva Pruta. That's the first question. Well, would that render him into a Shoel or not? Because on the one hand, it does partake of the utilization, which does result in Mamon. On the other hand, it's less than a Pruta. Then the next question after that is, assuming you require a pruta, what about a case where he borrowed two objects, two animals, each one of which for the utilization which would be less than a sheva pruta? So combined, it adds to a sheva pruta, but each one would not constitute a sheva pruta. Those are the two questions that we have to decide. So we're suggesting an idea. That is to say, I mean, there's two ways you can look at it. Clearly, it is, there is a hana over here. There is a hana, but it doesn't measure up to the hana of a sheva pruta. So, how do we resolve it? And you could say this way, you could say that way. But how do we resolve it? I think that we have to ask ourselves, what is the relevance of the hana to the whole concept of shoel? Now, as we said, what renders him into the show into being a shoel, of course it's hana, but it's not just hana. We're assuming that it has to be tashmish, right? That the hana comes about as a result of the tashmish, correct? So now, if we say that it's a qualitative phenomenon, that it's not considered a tashmish unless it produces some benefit, okay, which is of a monetary character. So then we don't really care about the amount. If it's a share of tashmish, that is, the share of tashmish that it would sort of register. It has monetary value in a qualitative sense. So then I don't care about the amount. You see, I don't care about the amount. But that's tashmish. That defines it as tashmish. But the essence really is that I utilize. There's the utilization of the product in a certain manner, which can yield monetary benefit. But how much it actually does, it doesn't matter. It's the fact that it's the quality of the tashmish that's at issue here. The character of the tashmish that's at issue. If that's the case, so even chatzi pruta, it doesn't matter, because that's the guy. Once the guy has the right to use the object in that manner, that's it. It's really the usage. Or no, it's the fact that the usage is the means, but the gavra has to be nana. We're talking about hanoah, that he achieves a hanoah. If we're talking about achieving hanoah, and the hanoah has to be measurable, so then it has to be mamam. Less than a pruta is not considered, it's not measured, that's not dine mamonis. If the hanoah has to be measured in dine mamonis, so the minimal amount of dine mamonis is, from a transactional standpoint, is a pruta. Less than a pruta, doesn't count. For example, I'll give you an example. If you steal less than a sheva pruta, is that theft? It's an interesting case. The answer is that you don't have to pay back. But it is theft. So it's the Avera. There's an Issa Gezel attached to it. You see? Because it partakes of the quality of Gezel. And Gezel, why? Because it's a monetary object. The object is a monetary object. But in terms of the laws, which mean to restore restoration, that's measured in terms of Dine Mominus. In terms of Dine Mominus, it doesn't register. Dine Mominus is transactional. People transact. And that's why... even the Mekudeshesli, it has to be at least Shav Pruta. If a person were to marry, betroth a girl with, it's got to be Shav Pruta, right? The object was less than a Pruta. It was a little cracker. It wasn't even a full cracker, which nobody would even give a Pruta for. So she's not Mekudeshes, because it doesn't have transactional value. So that's the two sides, the way I'm saying. Is it just the qualitative phenomenon? The qualitative phenomenon that it partakes of money, or no, it's measured in terms of the how much I know that he had to benefit, that I've benefited. If the essence is that I've benefited from it, so what benefit? If it's a measuring rod of benefit, then it has to be measured in monetary terms. You see, if that's the idea, that the benefit that I derive must be something concrete, measurable. In monetary terms, then you have to have at least a pruta. Now we're turning to the next question. Let's assume now that we've decided that you need a sheva pruta. Less than a sheva pruta would not render you into a shohev. So what about if I borrow two animals? Again, I for the sake of this case, the assumption is it's in one she'ela. Because if I borrow one today and one tomorrow, that I don't think is that's not the question. That's clearly not going to work. Neither one of them. But the Gemara phrases it this way. Shal shte paros. He borrowed two animals. Lasas ben pruta. To do with them a pruta. Of course, each one is less than a pruta. Mahu. Mi amrinan, do we say zil basar shoer l'mashal? So let's just go according to the shoer l'mashal. That between the two of them, there was a transaction of a pruta. Okay, that's one way to look at it. Or else, no. Odilma zil basa paros. Let's measure it in terms of the objects. V'chol chad v'chad aleka mamona. And each one does not have mamona. Now, my first instinct here is to, like, let's take it very simply. What is the nature of a situation in which I borrow two objects at one time? How should I view that? Is it really two separate halvos? Right, except it's a convenience. But really, each one, there's no difference between borrowing A, then I come back and borrow B, right? Each one's a separate halva, a separate she'ela, I'm sorry, she'ela. Correct? So now, the same thing, it's two separate she'elos. It's two separate she'elos, except there's a simplistic way of doing it. I can combine it in one action, but the she'ela... It's not, you see, anyway, if you say that it's two separate she'elos,
So then neither one of them is a sheilah. Each one of them, right? If you say that it's one sheilah, so then it does have a pruta. It's a sheilah with a pruta. It doesn't fit that smoothly into the language of the Gemara, in my opinion. But basically what you would be saying then is that you've created a new entity of the sheilah. And it's a new entity, it's not one, you know, it's a new entity of two paros, it's though it's one para. It's like it's one para for the sake of this. You see? In other words, what are we saying over here? Is this creating a new entity? And the entity is not measured by physically discrete beings, it all becomes one thing. It's one chefza. The chefza shel sheila now becomes both animals, okay, and they combine. Or do we say they don't combine and each one remains separate? That's the way that approach would have it. All right, we're going to proceed now to a different way of approaching it, assuming that it's considered to be one sheila. It's not like it's one transaction. Okay? So then that's the point. That's what it means, shoel umashel. That there's an arrangement. There's an arrangement. There's a transaction between two people. It's a transaction. It's a kinyan. So if we're looking in terms of the kinyan, this is a modification of the kinyan of she'ela. In order to become a she'ela, it comes about through the kinyan, and the kinyan has to be something which produces a benefit which is measurable in terms of mamon, so then it qualifies. So it's determined by the transaction. That's what it means, she'ela mashal. There's a certain transaction. And what gives me a din of a she'ela? The transaction. And the transaction is one which produces monetary benefit. In other words, is the shavius, the fact that it has to be a monetary entity, does that qualify the transaction? That's a din in the transaction? Or no? It's a din in the chefza shel, that the object becomes a borrowed object. If it's a qualification in the object, that this object has the shame that it's a borrowed object, so then it's got to be that each object, this is clearly a separate object. You can't say that they're one object. Each object, I have an achrayas. It's the object that I have an achrayas for. I have an achrayas for this particular animal. I have an achrayas for that particular animal. So if we say that it's a qualification in terms of the object of the she'ela, that this object is not considered to be loaned to me, it doesn't have the shame of being a loaned object, unless that's in the framework of mamonis, it has to be shevapruta. So that's what the second side is saying. That's the other side. That zil basa paros. No. You go after the para, after the object. V'chol chada v'chada lekem amona. On each one there's lekem amona. So this one is not a borrowed object, and that's not a borrowed object. So the question is whether it qualifies the object of the she'ela or whether it qualifies the transaction of the she'ela. That's Sheol Marshall.
Okay, now the Gemara goes on to a new series of questions. These types of ibayis, you know, where there's two possibilities. Here, however, I mean, in contradistinction to the previous ones that we were talking about, which had to do, I mean, according to Rashi, with simply the issue of she'ela itself. That is, basic elements of what constitutes she'ela itself. Now, it's talking about something, it's talking about the issue of ba'al avimo. Chakira is pertaining to the issue of ba'al avimo. As we'll see, shal me shutfin. What about when you have shutfin? Let's assume simple case of shutfin, two. Could be more, doesn't matter, but you have three owners, it doesn't matter, shutfus. But you have joint ownership. So let's say I borrowed an object and the object is owned by two people. Okay. V'nishal lo echad mehen. And one of them was loaned to him. Mahu. What is the din? Kulo ba'ala v'inan v'haleka. Do we say that the entire owner, whatever you want, all the owners, what it means, the entire ownership is required, Veleka, and it's not here. Odilma meyahu palga diday miyamifta. Or do we say from that person's half, he's pater? Well, let me ask a simple question. When you borrow an object from Shutfim, do you have to, is it from both? Or is it, let's say only one person lends it to you? This would seem, in this case, it would seem that both people agree with the Yishela. That the Gemara is not taking that up. Because that's not at issue. The Gemara is, what that issue is, they both agree. So, you know, you're borrowing the object with permission. But in terms of the Ba'al of Imo factor, only one of them is working for you. The other one is not. It's also interesting to note that the Gemara is not considering one possibility. The Gemara is not considering the possibility that he should be completely exempt. Either it's nothing. One possibility is that it's nothing and that he's completely liable. The other possibility, which would hold exemption, is only saying Me'ahu Palga. It's only offering exemption from that part. But no one's offering complete exemption. In other words, if you, according to the second side, you borrowed an animal from Shutfim and there was an accident, the animal is destroyed. Alright? Only one of the owners was borrowed unto you, was loaned to you. So according to the second side, let's say it was $100. So $50 you're exempt from. You don't have to pay that owner, the owner that was with you. But the other person you have to pay. So that's the most. But no one is arguing that it should be completely exempt because of Baal Avimo. I would have, if it wasn't for the Gemara, on my own logic, I would have said that there's a possibility to say that it's Baal Avimo. Because I'm not clear, why do you have to have Kulo Balov? Why wouldn't that be a question? A first question. That this partial, I mean, I could see neither or. Either it's not Balov Imo, because you don't have the, you know, you don't have the Baal, right? Or no, you do have a, you have, as long as you have one of the owners, that's Balov Imo. And in other words, that Chakira, the either or Chakira, is it considered to be Balov Imo or not? All or nothing, so to speak. Here you have the nothing possibility, you see, but you don't have an all possibility.
That's what.
In a case of Shutfin, the Gemara starts off with the premise that clearly if you borrowed both owners, that would be Baal Avimo, and then he would be completely exempt. Okay? In the case where you borrowed one, the Gemara is not going to go so far as to say you're completely exempt. So the idea of Kulo Baalav has, you know, that's just a question as to whether that removes the possibility of Baal Avimo only on the half, on Miktsas. That's what it's saying. Now, do we say that it's nothing because you don't have the complete Bailam, right? Or do we say that, at least you have half, Me'ahu Palga, he should be exempt from that half of the person who's with him, of that owner that's with him, that he should be exempt. But the owner that's not with him, that of course he has to pay him. He wasn't, why should he suffer? As far as he's concerned, it's a she'ela. He agreed to the she'ela. And it's as far as he's concerned, it's a she'ela shelo Baal Avimo. It's very interesting to check the Rambam in She'elu Pikadon, Perek Sheni, Halacha Ches, Shal Min HaShutfim, V'Nishalo Echad Mehen. If he borrowed from Shutfim, and he borrowed one of the owners, and then he goes on, V'Chein HaShutfim Sheshalo V'Nishalo Echad Mehen. Okay? All right. Let's forget the second case of Shutfim Sheshalo. But the first case, the Rambam Harez has Suffek. V'Nishalo B'Volam O'Eino. The question is, so it's a Suffek whether this is considered She'elo B'Volam or not. L'Fichach Emesa Eino Meshalim. Okay, so now the Rambam proceeds to treat this as a Suffek. Because that's that Suffek, and then it's a Suffek of Mominus. So Suffek Mominus, in these cases, so you can't obligate the Shomer, the Shoel, to pay. Because it's a Suffek. On the basis of a Suffek, you can't obligate him to pay. V'Yimtafsu Abalim, but if the owners came and grabbed the money, Ein Motzi and Miyadam, the same principle. You can't force them to give it up because it's a Suffek. A Pasha Bahashome HaRezim Mashalim. If the Shoma was Poshea, then he does pay. The Rambam in Hilchos Chiras Perek Rishon, Hamafkid Eitzel Chavero, one who deposits an object for Shmira by his friend, Bein Bechinim, whether for free, Bein Beschar, whether for money. O Heshilo, or if he loaned it to him. O Hiskelo, or he rented it to him. Imshal hashomer es habaalim, if the shomer borrowed the owner's, im hadavar shelahen, with the object, o sachron, or he hired them, hare hashomer patam miklum, the shomer is completely patam. Afilu pasha b'dava, shashama, even if he neglected it, he was negligent. The avad machmas apshia, and it was lost because of the pshia, hareza patar, he's patar. If that's the case, if the Rambam holds that Bolavimo is putter, even if he was poshea, so then, and the Rambam holds that Shaul mina shutfim v'nishal oechen mehen, that's a suffix. That's a suffix, and therefore he's putter. Because on the basis of a suffix, you can't be mechayvim. So then, why, if he was poshea, what difference would it make if he's poshea and not poshea? Why should that make any difference? What's the difference? The Rambam already, it's the same suffix. That is, it would seem, according to the Rambam, there's no difference between poshea or any other accident. And for which Balavim works. So now, you have the nishal. He borrowed from Shutfim, and he borrowed one of the owners. And the object, what's the difference if he was Poshea or not Poshea? Well, why is he Mishalim if he's Poshea? You see, if the first question was left Besafek, that is, if the Rambam held that Pshia, Bivalim, is a Safek, and therefore he can't make the Shomer pay, right? So then I can understand why he pays over here. Because then it will be a sfek sfeka. Then you'd have two suffixes. One suffix is whether it's considered balavimo. And even if you say it is balavimo, it's another suffix whether proshea would exempt him, right? So therefore, it would be a sfek sfeka that he's putter, and then you can be chayim to pay. Then you can, but that's not what the Rambam is saying. The problem is that the Rambam doesn't paskin that way, that it's that pshia bavalim is a suffix. The Rambam seems to paskin that it's clear that he's exempt. And so what difference does it make? Why would he say Impasha Mashalim? Alright, let's just go through some approaches that are being suggested. One approach is being suggested that, well, this would fit into the Rambam, so to speak. I think that would fit the Rambam. That is, I mean, I'm not saying it's the only way to approach the Rambam, but for starters, that is that the question is, what exactly is a shutfus with regard to this halacha when it comes to Shoel, to lending it? Is each one have the status of an owner? Or no? It's a new gavra, so to speak, but the gavra is a group, so it's a shutfus. The owner, each one is not an owner in his own right, it's just that he's part of a group. And the owner is the group. So, if that's the case, then the group owns it, the group lends it, and Balavimo would refer to the group. Because each one independently is not an owner. It's a group phenomenon. So if the entire group is present, I mean, if there were three, you'd have to have three. If there were 10, you'd have to have 10. And so on and so forth. That is, according to this way of learning, it's not a question of the concept of ball of emo. It's just a question that's, for whatever reason, it's really a question about shufas. It just happens to intersect with this, but that's not the focus. The other way to approach it is to say that each person is considered a baal of the object. But so let's say there's two. So each one, but it's a limited baal. In other words, I'm a baal and you're a baal. Except since we're both baalim and the chefza, each one's power is going to be limited. Because I need your consent to sell it or whatever the case may be. Or maybe I could sell my part. But each one has the... In other words, it's limited in that no one is the baal of the complete object. But each one is a baal. Let's put it that way. I would say it's limited. You could look at it that way. You could say that the first way we approached it was that no one really is a baal, but the baal is a new conglomerate, a new entity. It's kind of like a tzibur concept. Belongs to the tzibur. Each person is just a member of the tzibur, but the tzibur is the owner. Here we're saying it's not like that. Now we're saying it's not like that. We're saying each person has the same baal. If that's the case, then it should be Balavimo. So what's the other side? Perhaps we can formulate it this way, that each one has the status of being a Baal. It's smoother to say that. To say that each one is not a Baal, it's true, it's not the same. But my balus is modified by the fact there's another baal. So you can have a number of baalim. But each one has the status of a baal, and therefore, if one of them was present, you would have baal of imo. Ah, but is that it? Is it just the halacha of baal of imo? Means anyone who's a baal of the object is with me. When I did the shmira, there was a baal present. Or no, it's a din in the mashil. There's the shoel and the mashil. Who is the mashil of the object? The mashal is the combination. For that, clearly, the mashal is not one guy, but it's all the owners. All the owners have agreed. So there's two owners, let's say. Keep it simple. So in terms of who is the guy of the mashal, that's a different guy. Because clearly, that's the case. I mean, if it's broken, I got to pay both of them. Who do I pay? The mashal. Who's the mashal? Both guys. So that, I think, is the chakira. Is it a din of baal avimo? Is it a din in the mashil? Right? So then, you don't have the mashil. I mean, you have one, but he's not the mashil. He's just the baal. If you say it's a halach of baal avimo, anyone who has the status of baal, that's sufficient. It's not contingent upon the mashil. So there's two separate ideas. There's the she'ela, and then there's a baal. A baal achefza. So then, it would work. However, if you say it's not a din in baal achefza, but it's a din in the mashal, that the mashal lends the object and he's with him, then you'd have to have both. All right, so we're now explaining the way the Gemara learned pshat. That, not like the Rambam, but the Gemara's question, shol meshutfim. He barred from shutfim, and he barred one of the owners with him. So the Gemara seems to be learning that there's two possibilities. Either it's not considered to be baal avimo, and the shoel is liable for the complete thing, or no, at least that portion for the owner who's with him, he should be exempt from. But he'd have to pay the other person. So according to this way of learning, it's at most baal avimo is going to be only half. There's no havamina to say that it's more than that, but the havamina is to say that it's nothing. That it's not even considered baal avimo. So perhaps the issue is that the concept of baal avimo can be looked at from two different points of view. There's the baalim per se. There's an institution of baalim, shoel, mashal, whatever it is. The mashal, so to speak, there's the institution of baalim. So there's... It's incomplete. The other thing is half the owner. What do you mean half the owner? You need the owner. Half the owner is not enough because half the owner doesn't have the full authority. So one can say baal avimo is measured in terms of the complete owner. That is both of them. Now, both of them have given their consent that he can lend it, that's for sure, but they have not consented that it should be baal avimo. That is to say, they were not nishal. So therefore, half is nothing. It's just it's not baalim. I mean, the same baalim that lend it have to be the same ones that are with them. So therefore, it's nothing. There's no baal avimo. That is, we're measuring baal avimo in terms of the owner, the abstract owner, if you want to put it that way. And that's not present. You could have a single owner. You could have a group ownership. That's the owner. The owner is the group. See, I would say perhaps we can look at it at a different angle. When we say baal of imo, what do we mean? Are we talking about the abstract owner? Or no, the owner only insofar as the individual to whom you have to pay. That's also a concept of owner. That is, when there's, who am I liable to? Okay? So is this measured in terms of the abstract owner? Or no, it's measured in terms of the hischaivus of the shoel. The shoel obtains the hischaivus. Then he has a hischaivus to pay to concrete individuals. It doesn't matter that. So who cares about the abstract? The abstract now boils down to practical people. I have to pay you, I have to pay you, I have to pay you. You see? So if you say that it's measured in terms of the abstract owner, baal avimo is in terms of who's to identify the owner. Veleka, because you don't have it. I mean, you only have part of it, but you don't have the owner. So why should I mean part of an owner is nothing. You have to have the owner. But if we say that Baal Avimo is reckoned in terms of the Yischaivus of the Shoel, to whom am I? So there, the fact that you're partial owner, doesn't, what difference does it make? I have to pay you, I have to pay you, I have to pay you. So then Baal Avimo works in terms of the Yischaivus of the Shoel. So if it's meant, if it's a qualification of my chiyuv to pay, so then if you were with me, I should be I'm exempt from you. If you weren't with me, I'm for that purpose, I could treat you as separate owners. For the purpose of repayment, it's going to boil down to I'm going to have to pay separate people. The fact that you two have some kind of relationship to each other, what difference does it make to me? As far as I'm concerned, I have to treat each one as an owner. So if it's measured in terms of the individual that I have to treat as an owner for the purpose of my hischaivus, so then you have Baal Avimo. The second side of the Gemara is looking at it differently. In other words, it's only interested in one thing. When I took this object, I acquired responsibilities to certain individuals. Okay? Those are the Baalim. Those are the Baalim for the purposes of Baal Avimo. So then, whoever was with me, right? You're a Baal in the sense I'm going to have to pay you. Okay, you are with me, exempt from you. You, however, are a Baal, who I'm obligated to pay. You are not with me. You, I have to pay. All right, but Tosis, v'nisha lo echad mehem. Tema, Tosis asks the question, my kamaboya lay. What's the question? What's he asking him? The kivon, the im nishalu lo kol ha-baalim patameh kol, for since, if there was loaned to him all of the owners, he'd be exempt from everything. Hashta yiftar mechetzio. He should be put from half. It should be a double pashit. That we should treat it that way. K'di amrinim b'maruba. As we say by maruba, chamisha bakar, afilu chamisha chatzoi bakar. All right, so the facts are, in Baba Kama, Ayin Aleph, the Gemara raised the question that if... Boi mine Rava Merav Nachman. Rava asked the question from Rav Nachman, Gunav Shor, Shal Shnei Shutfim. If a person stole an ox of two partners, Vitavcho, okay, and he slaughtered it. So then he has to pay five. That's the penalty for a case where you steal something and subsequently slaughter it. Okay, but now Vahodo Leechad Mehen, and he was moded to one of them. Mahu, Chamisha, but he wasn't moded to the other. So do we say Chamisha Baka, Amar Rachmana? Do we say that, does he pay the penalty? Because it's five. Is it five complete? Whole Bakar, whole oxes? Below Chamisha Chatzai Baka, but not five halves? Odilma, Chamisha Baka, Amar Rachmana, Afil Chamisha Chatzai Baka. All right, so his answer was, Amale, Chamisha Baka, Amar Rachmana, Velo Chamisha Chatzai Baka. But the Gemara goes on. The Gemara goes on to discuss it, and the conclusion of the Gemara is that Chamisha Amar Rachman v'afilu chatzoi, v'afilu, even five. Except you have to realize that it's talking about where Edom came later on. Because if he's moda b'knas, he's potter. So that's not the pshat is that he was moda to one of them. So he's exempt from that person. Later on, witnesses came and testified that he stole it and slaughtered it. So with regard to the person that he was moded to, he's exempt. But the witnesses now will be effective in creating liability to the partner that he wasn't moded to. He was not moded to him. So that's the question. Now that he's found guilty in that situation, does he pay him the chamisha? Because Chamisha Baka, it's not completely Chamisha, it's only a percentage. So the Gemara says that he does. So each person is treated separately. So Tosta's question is that, what's the question? The same thing over here. That in terms of liability, the fact that they're partners is irrelevant. That is to say that it's a monetary obligation. And it's measured in terms of my obligation to you, which is five times. I've got to pay you fivefold. Fivefold of what? Fivefold of what I damaged to you. So if it turns out that it's not five complete oxes, it's only five parts, five halves, whatever it is, so then I have to pay that. That's the conclusion of the Gemara. So he's saying, interestingly, he's saying the same thing should be over here. What's the difference?
So
Rav Yesh Lomar, so Tosfos answers, his question is that each one should be treated separately. I think it's in line with what I said, that the idea of Bala Vimo is a question of liability. It's measured in terms of my liability, not in terms of who the abstract owner ought to be. V'yesh lo medahasam sfarahu, shiyashalem lefima sheganav. There, it's a sfara, that he should pay in accordance with what he stole. Avol she'ela bivalam ain sfara liftor. But she'ela bivalam is not a sfara liftor. V'havi kechidush, and it's a chidush. V'ein lach bau elechidusho. And one cannot assume anything more than the basic Kiddush. It's not just that, but Arba Chamisha Bakar is also a Kiddush. That doesn't bother Tosfos. The reason why the Chamisha Bakar is a Kiddush is because that's a strange kind of a case. Normally, if I steal from you, I'm only obligated to pay you back. Or there is Kefel. Kefel is a Knas, a penalty. But that's already a penalty. If you're Moda, you don't get the kefil. Because in terms of dine mamonos per se, in terms of ownership of money, if I stole from you, it's interesting, a certain leniency in the halacha. In halacha, a person steals money, he doesn't go to jail. So all of these cases that we have today of, what is it called, white-collar crime and corruption, embezzlement and all that kind of thing, where people, what?
Money laundering.
Anyways, the monetary schemes and so forth, of course it's a serious avera. Gezel is a serious avera. But the penalty is that he has to pay back. And that's it. You can't really harm him in any way. You can't put him in jail. According to halacha. In America, it's completely different. But all you could do is really pay back the principal. Pay back the principal. Then can the money that you lost in interest or anything like that, you can't sue the person. That is the thief, because he didn't steal that. That's something that it's like I could have invested it. I would have made money and so on and so forth. Not in maybe in an American court, but in halacha, it's meaningless because it didn't exist. So the only thing is kefel. Kefel is a knas. That's really sort of a punishment, because to deter him, you could see yourself, if stealing would be completely risk-free. Why wouldn't a person take a chance? The worst that could happen is he gives back the money. And he doesn't lose anything. So there's kefel. Kefel is twice the amount. But then there's other knasos, that is 4 and 5, by the shor oseh. If he stole, that's a case where he stole the shor oseh, and he slaughtered it, or he sold it. Then it's a big penalty, 4 or 5, 4 for the seh, chamisha bakar, and he has to pay 5 ox. So that too is a chiddush. That's not something that you would have thought on your own. That's clearly a chiddush of the Torah. Yeah, Tosfos asked a question. That's Tosfos v'Nishal. That it should be pashut, because that if all the owners were lent, he'd be putta from everything. So now, he should be, if one of the owners is lent, he should be putta from chetzio. Now, as we say in Merubah, so Tosfos is using a source from the Gemara in Bava Kamma, where a person stole and slaughtered the animals, he's chayv to pay 5 times. And let's say he's only chayv to one of the owners, because he had confessed previously to the other owner. So the Gemara says that it's pashut, that chamisha bakar, afila chamisha chatzai bakar. That, of course, he should pay whatever he owes, pay the partial amount. So Tosa's question was, it should be the same thing over here. Okay? So Tosa's answer is that, no, it's not the same thing. Dahasam svarahu, sheyasham lefi ma shaganav, that there is a svara that he should pay according to what he stole. Aval she'el b'valam ain't svara liftar, but she'el b'valam, there's no svara. V'havi k'chiddush, and it's like a chiddush. V'ein l'chabav al chiddusho. That's a general rule that when something is a chiddush, so you can't just make your logical inferences on the basis of comparing it to other things because it's a chiddush, and you can only go by what the chiddush itself is, and you can't draw conclusions. So yesterday I asked the question that five, that also is a chiddush. Chamisha baka is also, tachas hashor is also, that's a big chiddush. Because I said in terms of nezikin, damages, basically you have to pay what you, just the damage, the truth, as I mentioned. In halacha, it's dinei mamonish. You can't punish a person for stealing, he has to pay back. Then there's the knas. A ganav is chayav for a knas. The knas is kefel. He pays twice what he stole plus. In other words, that amount. If he stole $100, he has to pay $200 in order to deter it, to be a deterrent. So this is a chiddush, that if the shara is there, there's 4 and 5 if he stole it and slaughtered it. So that's a chiddush too. So what's the idea? At a superficial glance, it seems to be the same thing, that Tosis is not bothered by the fact that Chamisha Bakar is Chiddush. It says so in the Torah. If it didn't say in the Torah, I don't think anybody would have that rule. Okay? You'd have the ordinary case of paying back plus the Kefal. So that's clearly a Chiddush. And again, you have Balavimo as a Chiddush. So at first glance, our problem is why is Tosfos making an issue of that in the case of Baal Avimo? In other words, I don't think Tosfos means that the chiyuv to pay five, that's a chiddush. You'd have to say that. Yeah, I think you'd have to say that because it's not svara that you should pay five. But I think what he means to say is that there's two ideas. One is that there's a chiyuv to pay five. Okay? But once that chiyuv is established, so then it should follow the regular pattern of indemnity, that it goes to the owners. Just like all the payments. You have the basic payment of the principal. Okay? So that's, if there's two owners, you got to pay each one. That's for sure. Then you have the kefel. So that also is measured in terms of the owner. The payment has to be made to who? To the owner. So each one has the status of being an owner. So of course it's split up. There's no concept that it has to be an entity. So that's what he's saying. So now it's just an extension. Instead of paying kefel, we've increased it because of the fact that that's a chiddush. And due to the fact that he stole the ox and whatever, there's a number of reasons that are given, because then he prevents him from doing his malacha. It's a more grievous crime. From the standpoint of the crime, it's a more grievous crime. But that's an increase in the knas. But in terms of the knas is restitution. Once it's established, it has to work on svara. It's restitution. So who does the restitution go to? It goes to the owner. So, of course, chatzai. Each owner, he has to pay back. So there's no reason to say that it has to be one entity of a five, and you can't break it down. That's what Tosfos say. However, see, because in our case, the whole idea of Baal Avimo is a chiddush, which means it doesn't derive from any preceding principle. It's not a svara. It's not something you work out by svara. In other words, I'm not saying that. I don't mean that there's no logical reason. I'm not saying it's unlogical or illogical or irrational. I'm not saying that. But you can't. It's a chiddush. It doesn't stem from any previous existing poem. It's a shoel. It's a shoel in Baal Avimo. So why should it be pugah? So it's, so to speak, exeris akasa. That it's not something that you could have worked out in your own logic. Now, once it's exeris akasa, you can find reasons for it. You can explain it. Whatever it is, but it's not the same. It's not the same. Oh, so if, as you have, it's not the same as by paying back the Chamisha Baka. that's a matter of payment. So you pay to each owner. So that's the svara, that once I have a chiyuv to pay. So I pay to, I don't have to pay to, the fact that I don't have to pay you doesn't exempt me from paying you. That wouldn't make sense. You see? Ah, but this is a different issue. Because here, that's the question. The question is how is Baal Avimo measured? Is it measured in terms of the mashal, so to speak, or is it measured in terms of the owner, in terms of restitution that I have to pay to? So that you couldn't derive from svara, because the whole idea is a chiddush. So then you have to know how it works, how the mechanism works, and therefore it's possible that the mechanism works differently, that it's not measured in terms of how I pay back, that if one of the owners is with me, so I don't have to, that's a din in payment, so I don't have to pay, that exempts me from his chelik. That, he says, you couldn't derive from the same logic. Now we continue, shut from Shishalu, partners who borrowed an object, v'nishali echad mehen. Now, the owner over here is a single person. It's sort of a reversal of the previous case. Here the borrowers are shutfin, but they're borrowing it from one person, and he was loaned to one of the people. Mahu. What do we say? Kulo shorol b'inon v'leka. Do we say that there's no ball of email over here because it has to be kulo shorol? Odilma v'hi palga d'shaili mi'es mifta. Yeah, kulo shorol b'inon shehei ha'bal nishal l'chol shorol paraso. That the ball should be borrowed to the complete shorol. Or no, each one is separate, and the one that he's lent to, he'll be part of from that. So it's either it's no good at all, or again, it's for that half. Once again, the Rambam learns this differently, because he puts it together with the other halacha. That's in She'elu Pikadon, Perek Beis, Halacha Ches. So he starts off by saying, Shalom and Ashutfim. V'nishalo echad mehem. V'chein ha-shutfun she'shalo. Okay, shutfun she'shalo. V'nishali echad mehem. This is what we're focusing on now. And two partners borrowed from one owner, and the owner was lent to one of them. Ha-reza sofik im hish'ele b'volam o'ena. So it's across the board. According to the Rambam, across the board, as opposed to the Gemara. The Gemara is learning that at most we're going to exempt one of the Shoalim. Now, before we go any further, though, how do we understand this concept of Shutfum, of Shutfus, in terms of the Shoel? What does that mean? Shutfum Sheshalu. Rashi on Shutfum Sheshalu. Lach Rosh Bo Karka Shel Shutfus. So this is very specific. That is to say, that they're not shutfim in the borrowing. It's not as we would imagine it, that two of us want to borrow your car. So we're partners in borrowing your car. That's what I would have thought you're talking about. Instead of sometimes one person borrows it, sometimes two people borrow it. That's not what Rashi seems to be saying, but rather that we're borrowing, we're shutfim, but it's not enough that we're shutfim. That is, we're borrowing it to work karka in which we are shutfim. My question is, why do you need that factor? Why can't we not be shutfim in the karka? Let's say we're not shutfim in the karka, but we're both borrowing it. All right, anyways, it's being suggested that Rashi must say this because, let's say, two people are not shutfim in the property, but they both borrow the cow. But not for the same, I have my karka, you have your karka, so then that really would be two separate shalos. They may do it at the same time and all of that, but it breaks down to two separate shalos. Each one is a complete shoel. Whatever the arrangement is, one day you use it, one day I use it, but then there's two separate shoelim. the thing that bothers me is that why is Rashi seem to imply that's the only way that you'd have the shutfus in terms of the Shayla? Is there not a situation where you're borrowing something for a joint use, even though you're not shutfum in karka? Like you borrow a baseball bat or a ball, whatever, to play ball. We're all using it together. It's kind of we're joined together in the usage. Why wouldn't Rashi take a case like that? Checking out the Ritva brought down. Okay, so brought down in the Ritva brought down in the Shita. Shutfim Shasharalu Pirish Rashi Lachrosh Bakarka Shutfus. To plow the karka of Shutfus. Pirish Lipirusho. The Ilu Shutfus Be'esek Uchiyote Bo. Inami Shnei Anashim Bialma. She'elam Karka B'Shutfus. Shasharalu Para Lachrosh Ba. Chodesh Echad. Yesh B'mashma. Shetehei lezeh she'ula l'shalo tesvav yom v'lezeh tesvav yom uch ilu kol echad v'yechad sh'ol b'fnei atzmo v'kulei sho'el havi v'chol chav echad mipi Rebbe. That means he got it from his Rebbe. Let's ask a slightly different question. In this situation, it's going to break down into distinct usages. So then you could see that even though we went about it together as a group, but the truth of the matter is it's really two distinct shaylos. What about if we borrow your horse to go down, or your camel, whatever it is, there's room for two people to ride it somewhere. That's the usage. And we're going together. See, why is it not enough that we're joined together in the usage? Apparently what Rashi is saying is more than that. We're joined together in that. It's just that, right? It seems to be more than that. It is that we have a shutfus in the karka that's being worked by the animal. Then it becomes shutfum shashalu. So I'm suggesting that there's another case. There's a case where it breaks down into separate shalos. That is, you're going to use it or not, but we're going to use it separately. But where we're using it together, okay, we're going somewhere together. We need the horse. So we're going to both be riding the horse together. So we're using the animal together. So there's no shutfus between us in terms of karka. Why would that not be sufficient? Then that would be a big chiddush. Why? Because this is going to an extreme. You're telling me we have to have this joint ownership in the karka first. Then we borrow the animal for that piece of karka. That's shutfum shasholu. It's interesting that the Rambam doesn't mention this qualification from which I would assume that he would have mentioned it. The Namuka Yosef learns, like Rashi, that the shutfum shasholu Parami is a lachrosh karka shel shutfus. So he learns like Rashi. But he adds something in terms of the explanation of v'nishal. What does it mean, v'nishal liyechad mehen? Because that's a good question. How is he nishal liyechad mehen since they're shutfim? So, and they're working the same thing. So he's nishal liyechad, he's nishal lishneim. In what sense is he nishal liyechad mehen when they're both working together? And he's working, let's assume he's working that. He's working with them. Let's assume. So then it's the shutfus. How is he nishal liyechad mehem once they're shutfim? Well, you could say that he's nishal liyechad mehem, meaning, since we don't hold like Rav Hamnuna, see, this would be difficult according to Rav Hamnuna, because Rav Hamnuna holds it's only a din in the actual malacha. That the Baal has to be involved in the actual malacha. If that's the case, we don't paskin like him, but a lot of these questions apparently would be moot. But since we hold that he doesn't have to be involved in that malacha, it's two completely different things, and hence you can see why it's big chiddush. So now you have a situation of shutfim and shashalu. So they have the shutfus in that karka that the animal's being used for. The Baal is nishal yechad, meaning that one of these two people had hired his services somewhere else to work in his house or whatever. so it has to us. And that's the question. Since we're saying it qualifies the borrower, that the borrower is qualified as someone that the ball of his emo, right? Ah, so then now you have the question. That's what he proceeds to say. So he says, V'nishal bal hapara li echad min ha-shutfim l'malachto. De'ena shel shutfas. For a malacha which is not shel shutfas. De'ilu l'malachas ha-shutfim l'shneim ha-v'nishal. Because if he's borrowed, by one of them, let's say, but for a malacha in which they're shutfim, so then he's borrowed to both of them, because it's going to be qualified by the malacha. So indeed, if he's working, it's clear that the baal in this situation is not doing work with the animal in that field, which is shel shutfus, because then they wouldn't have a shaila. Then it's definitely considered to be baal of emo. Okay, but the point is that one of these two shutfim has secured the services of the owner for something else, which has nothing to do with the shutfus. So then you have the question. So the Nemuka Yosef proceeds to explain, Lukulo Shoel Be'inon. Do we require the complete Shoel? Hamashel Tzarech Sheyia Nishal L'Shoel V'lo L'Chatzi Shoel. He has to be lent out to the Shoel, but not to half the Shoel. So we're taking up the issue of shutfim sheshalu according to the way the Rambam learns. Where the Rambam learns, it's either or. The Rambam doesn't learn that it's just a question pertaining to half of the damage. But it's either or. So same thing, shutfim sheshalu. That means that they have a shutfus in the karka that the animal was barred for. And one of the shutfim, the owner is nishal to one of the shutfim in a different malacha, because if it was that malacha, it would appear that would be baal of emo for both of them, because they're shutfim, so then that wouldn't be a problem. But here you have the owner is working for one of the shutfim. So according to the Rambam, it's not a question of half. It's all or nothing. Do we say that it's not baal of emo at all? Or do we say it is baal of emo because he's with one of them? And if it's baal of emo with one of them, so then that's it. It's considered to be a sheila with baal of emo, and they're pater from everybody's pater. Okay, so we're trying to understand the two sides, that the baal was nishal to one of the shoalim. So one side says that's, so then they're pater. Both of them would be pater. Because according to that side, the concept of Baal of Imo is a modification of the She'ela. It's a She'ela. There's two kinds of She'ela. There's a She'ela per se. Okay? Then there's a She'ela of Baal of Imo. And what does that mean, Baal of Imo? Imo would be with a She'el, with the She'el. So since each one of them has the status of being a She'el, so then it doesn't matter. It doesn't have to be with Nishal to both of them. As long as he was Nishal to one of them, so then it's Baal of Imo, because that's the character of the Shela. It's a Shela with Baalim. And then the other one will be exempted, because that's the nature of the Shela. That he doesn't have to be the one that he's Nishal to, but rather he's a partner in a Shela, which is modified by the phenomenon, the characteristic of Baal of Imo. We have two approaches on the table here. One approach is looking at it from the angle of what exactly is the situation when it's a shutfus. What does that mean? Does that mean you can't say that each one is a partial shoel? That's a hard thing to say. To say that there's a concept of a partial shoel, that's a hard one to say. So perhaps that's the nature of the inquiry. That, as the Nemuka Yosei says, each one is Chayav Palga in this situation. Okay? But now, we have to analyze that. Does that mean that each one is a full-fledged Shoel? I'm a Shoel, you're a Shoel, you're a Shoel, we're all Shoelim. And independently, I have a full status of a Shoel. And the only thing is that due to the fact that we're, and one that, that doesn't contradict. There's no contradiction in the fact that I'm a shoel and you're a shoel. Because we happen to be shutfim in this venture. So the status of shoel is complete. But it's just a matter that my, due to the fact that you're also a shoel, that's going to affect the payment factor. My ischaivus will be modified because you also have ischaivus, and ultimately the claim of the owner can't be to more than it's worth. He can't collect from 10 people a full amount. So that's, in terms of his collection, he can only claim the amount of the animal, and thus each shoel will be chayev for half. Let's say there's two, or what if there's three? It'll be three. But that doesn't diminish my status of being a shoel. If that's the case, so then the way the Rambam is learning it. If that's the case, so then each one has a status of shoel and bolavimo. So it's fine. You have a shoel. Now the other side would be saying that it's meaningless. That if he's just one of them, because the individual himself is not defined as the shoel. He has rights of she'ela, but he is not the shoel, because in this case, in other words, instead of saying there are many shoalim and each one is a complete shoel, we're saying that each one by himself is not a shoel. It's just that he's part of a group, and the group, it's a different kind of a phenomenon, that the she'ela was given to the group, so it's like a shutfus. So that's a different concept, and you can't say he's a partial shoel. So in for the phenomenon of Balavimo to work in this case, it can only work if he's nishal to every person who constitutes the group. If he's nishal to every person that constitutes the group, so then you have Shela with the Balavimo, because together they form the Gavra Shel Shoel, so to speak. So that would be the Chakira. There's still room for a further Chakira, because it's possible to say that each person has a din of Shoel, okay? And Ba'al of Imo works, but Ba'al of Imo works only for that person. Just because, you see, if you take that position, okay, let's assume that's the position, that each person has a din of a Shoel, and Ba'al of Imo therefore works, even though he's just with one. Okay, but I can still say, but that should only work for that person. Why should it work for, well, that's, you could still raise a question, given that this is a given, that each person has a din of a Shoel. And therefore, it's Balavimo for sure. Still, my next question would be, does that Balavimo work for the whole thing, or does it work just for that person? The different positions, that is to say, we have the underlying issue, the underlying machlokas, about whether, in the case of Shutfim, and he's Nishal Yechad Mehem, that's considered Balavimo or not considered Balavimo, that's one issue. And then even if you should say it is considered Balavimo, we have another issue. Will that work only for the particular individual that is nishal too, or will it work for everybody, and everybody will be putter, as the Rambam learns it? So, the way we're summarizing it is, the underlying question is a question in terms of how do we view the situation. Do we say that each one is a gavra shel shoel? Each one has the din of a shoel, complete din of a shoel. It's just the halacha that his repayment is going to be modified due to the fact that he's not the only shoel. But other than that, he's a complete shoel. If we say that he is a shoel, so then you do have the phenomenon of balavima, which means that the baal of the object is nishal to a shoel, to the shoel, a shoel, whatever, it doesn't matter. But if we say that each person by himself is really not a shoel, it's just that he's part of a group, and the shoel over here is the group, is a new entity, so to speak, a new entity of shoel, or a new gavra of shoel, whatever term you want to use. The partnership is the shoel. And thus, according to that, you would not have Ba'al Avimo in this situation unless he were lent out to every person in the partnership. And in this situation, it's not. Okay? So that's the first question. That's the first question. Now, according to that side, the side that says that each person is not a shoel, so then you don't have Ba'al Avimo, and there's nothing to talk about further. There's nothing further to talk about. There's no Ba'al Avimo, and each person is chayef for everything. According to the other disagrees and says that's not the case. Each person has a din of a shoel, and thus the phenomenon of Ba'al Avimo is active. See, according to the first side, there's no Ba'al Avimo factor over here. According to the second side, the phenomenon of Ba'al Avimo is in effect. But we still have machlokas between the way the Gemara learns and the Rambam apparently learned the Gemara differently. I had a different gear, so it's not important to us. So we're just treating it as positions. Among all those who agree that the Baal of Emo factor is in, there's another machlokas. What does that mean? Will that be working only for that Shoel who the Baal is Nishal to? Or will it be working for the other person as well? Of course, at this point you might say, well, if he considers each person a separate Shoel, so it should work for him, why should it work for the other one? Machlokas over here will be, how do we understand the din of Baal of Emo? Do we understand the din that Baal of Emo, of course it works for the Shoel. When you only have one Shoel, there's nothing to talk about. But does it mean to say that whenever the Sheila is qualified by the phenomenon of Baal of Emo, so then there's no...
It's a fold.
There's no... Right? It's exemption. That's it. There's no... Of course, it's in the character of the Sheila. It's a Sheila which is modified by Baal of Emo, and therefore the patur applies to that Sheila. So any damages that accrue from that Sheila, there's no... is potter because it's Baal of Emo, so it doesn't matter who he's lent out to. It's a characteristic of the she'ela. Or no, it's not a din in the she'ela, it's a din in the shoel. It's a din in the shoel. You see? Now, in the case where there's one shoel, it doesn't make any difference. That's why this won't come up on the screen, so to speak. You see? You could say this way, you could say that way, it's not going to make any difference. Because there's only one shoel. But in the case where there are many shoalim, so then you got to go one step further. If it's something which is a characteristic of the Sheila itself, so then it doesn't matter that he's lent that to this one. It's the same Sheila. And that Sheila has the patur of Baal of Emo. So I get the credit. I won't have to pay. Because it's a Sheila. Any Sheila, which is a Sheila, which is modified by Baal of Emo, there's a patur from, there's the exemptions. If, however, you say it's a din in the Shoel, that the Shoel can exempt himself because Baal of Emo, so then it's only in that Shoel, where, to whom it applies. That would be the second machlokas. And we're going to continue now in the Gemara Daf Tzadik Vav. The Gemara has been discussing different situations that arise in terms of the concept of Baal of Emo. Been basically along the lines of Shutfus. Because what about if the object is owned by a group? And one of the members of the group is with the borrower. Does that constitute Baal of Emo, or do you have to have the entire owner, so to speak? And the same question has been raised on the other side. Let's say there's one owner, but there's a group that borrowed it, and the owner is loaned out to one of the individuals. That's the kinds of questions we've been dealing with. Now, there's a different permutation, so to speak, of this type of a question, because it gets complicated. When you're dealing with the issue of Sheila, it gets complicated in terms of ownership. If there's a single owner, then it's rather simple. If I own the object, I lend it to you, and I'm also hired unto you or loaned out to you, at least at the time. It can't be as you've learned. It's got to be either I was loaned out to you before you borrowed my object, or at the time of the borrowing of the object. We've already learned that if I lent you my object and I was not loaned out to you, and subsequent to that I became loaned out to you, and even if I was loaned out to you at the time of the accident, it won't help. So there's many principles pertaining to Baal of Emo, because that's a chiddush. As the Gemara says, it's a chiddush. And even though logically you'd say, what's the difference as long as I was with you at the time of the accident? No, it's something which qualifies. Apparently there's two different kinds of she'ela. It's not that simple. There's a she'ela which is qualified by the phenomenon of Baal of Emo at the time of the she'ela. It has to qualify the she'ela. But subsequent to the she'ela, I just happen to be with you, that's not going to effectuate. Because that's a regular she'ela of Ein Baal of Emo. So it's not measured in terms of the practicalities. Now we're going to go into some further questions which have to do with this issue. Shal Meho Isha. If a person borrowed from a woman. Obviously, we're talking about a married woman. Vinishal Bala. And her husband was hired out. In other words, you borrowed from a woman, a married woman, you borrowed an object, and her husband was hired out to you. Borrowed, whatever word you want to use. Now, the other side of that coin is Isha Shashala, or a woman, a married woman, borrowed an object. Vinishal Labal. And the owner of the object was hired out to her husband. On the surface, it's difficult. Because if you borrow something, an object that belongs to a woman, then you, and the concept of balavima, of course, would apply, but you'd imagine that you have to be hired out to the woman. Well, what does the husband have to do with this? Just because he's married to her. I mean, is he considered to be the owner of the object? Is that the issue at hand? Ah, so take a look at Rashi. Shal min ha'isha, parah shal nichsei malug. That is, it's talking about an animal that's part of the nichsei malug. There's different types of properties that a woman brings into the marriage. Okay, now one type of property is called nichsei malug, in which she owns the principal, the object belongs to her, but the husband has the usage of the peros, it's called. He has the peros, either he has the peros, for example, if it's a tree, and it produces fruits, and then the fruits belong to him. But the fruits over here is not just measured in terms of a substance of fruit. It's measured in terms of whatever it produces. So the use, in this case, if it's an animal, and the work of the animal is considered to be the peros. Anything which the object produces belongs to the husband. That's called nichsei malug. Now, thus, we're not talking about any object that a woman may have which is not nichsei malug. Nechasim that she owns that belong completely to her and the husband has nothing to do with them, so that's not what that would not fall under this discussion. In such a case, obviously, you'd have to be, if you borrowed an object that was not nichsei malug, and the Baal of Imo concept, you'd have to be hired out to the woman herself, not to the husband. We're only talking about this because that's the question. Since the husband is the owner of the peros, since he's the owner of the peros, so then perhaps that's considered to be Baal of Imo. Because who's the Imo over here? That's the basic question. Of course, the question is, who has the right to lend the object? The Gemara, the simple reading of the Gemara is that you borrowed from the woman. So Tosis takes this question up. Shal min ha'isha. Tema, Tosis asks, Dema koach yesh le'isha lahashil benichsei malug. What power does the woman have? Because the implication of the Gemara is that he borrowed from the woman. But now we're saying that the usage belongs to the husband. If the usage belongs to the husband, so how can the woman lend it out? It's not hers, so to speak. So that's the question. Shaperos labal. Ulabal yeshlo koach lahashil below reshusa. And the Baal does have the power to lend it without her permission, because it belongs to him. V'hi eina yechola lahashil klal. And she does not have she's not allowed to lend it at all. Now, in the Hagos Habach, he adds over here, V'yafilu im timtzaloma, and even if you want to say, D'yesh koch labal, l'isha rather, D'yesh koch l'isha kamo labal, but and if you want to say that the woman does have the power, because it's her object, So both the husband can lend it out because he owns it for that purpose. He owns the usage. And the woman can lend it out because it's her object. But still, he says, Amay nokat shal min ha'isha. The question is, why does the Gemara say that he borrowed it from the woman? Because according to the first pshat, you can't really borrow it from the woman. V'lo nokat shal min ha'bal. Why didn't it say shal min ha'bal? Question is the question of Tosfos is on the lashon of the Gemara. Why did the Gemara say Shalom and Aisha? The Tosfos gives two answers. V'yesh lomar de'ein habal yochol lahashil o limkor peros nichsei malug below reshusa. Okay, so one answer is that the husband cannot lend or sell the peros of Nichsei Malug without her permission. Kediyoma Rava Bioisha Shenaflu. This is a machlokus in Ksubos. That's in Ksubos. Mishum Rafcha Debesa. Tosfos is referring to the Gemara in Ksubos, Daf Pei, Amud Aleph on the bottom. Iboyelahu, Baal Shemocha Karka Leperos. The husband who sold Karka. That is the Karka of Nichsei Malug. Okay? So was Rashi's Machar Lacherim Karka Malug. Sheyasa Halokech V'yochal Peros. That is the husband. Question is, can the husband, the wife has karka of Nichsei Malug, can the husband sell his right, the right to the peros, can he sell it to somebody else? That's the Gemara's question.
But he can't sell the pig.
Mahu, mi amrinan, do we say, my dekani akmi, that which he acquired, he can sell. Okay? Odilma kita kinu le rabbanan peros labal. Or do we say that when the Chachamim made the Takana, they ordained that the peros should go to the husband, Mishum Revach Besa, Sheyachnas HaPeros LeBeso, V'yehe Mazon HaBayis Matzui, V'yetiv La. That is, that the peros, that he should have the peros in his house. And he'll have parnasa. He should have parnasa from this. And therefore, it's a takana. It's a rabbinic enactment. And because of this, he'll take care of her. It seems at this point in time that the question over here as to whether it's something which can be sold is, how do we understand it? Is it basically an economic right? It's dine mominus. So if it's measured in terms of dine mominus and he's the Baal, so then he has the right to transfer it. But if we say Rafcha de Besa, no, we're saying it's simply the usage. It's meant as a right of usage. That is, it's to enhance the stability of the home. So therefore, he has the right to utilize it, to utilize the peros. But it's not an economic right, and he can't sell it. We're using a very rough example over here to illustrate. It would be sort of like when a person stays at a motel and they have a continental breakfast. Or actually, if you're staying at a hotel and they serve meals, three meals a day, whatever it is, and you're not hungry, can you take the food and sell it to somebody else? Well, no, the answer is that you have a right to eat the food. It's a limited right of usage, so to speak. So if you eat it, that's fine. That's the right. But it doesn't transfer into economic ownership over the entity, which you own the entity and you can therefore transfer it. Interestingly enough, most of these cases in a hotel where they would come with meals, and let's assume for whatever reason you don't eat the meals, and you therefore want them to reduce the price, they won't. No, it comes with meals, and that's it. So you're paying. It doesn't mean, you see, if it were an economic ownership phenomenon, then you could say, I'll sell you back the meals and reduce my price. But then they're not going to say that. They're going to say, you're renting out the room. With the room comes a certain right to have the meal. But that's all it is. It's not measured as an economic thing. V'yesh lomar, Sotosis answers, the ein habal yochol lahashil o limkar. See, the Gemara over there, this is based upon the Gemara. That Tosis, it's a machlokas, as we've just seen. Does the Baal relate to it as an economic right? And therefore he can transfer it? So that was the question with regard to Mechira. So it was machlokas. Sotosis, first answer is, that the Baal does not have the right to lend it or to sell it, the peros of Nichsei Malug, below Rishusa, without her permission. Because she's still the Baal. She's the owner. Kedi Amar Rava B'Yisha Shenaflu, as Rava, this is the position of Rava in Isha Shenaflu, Mishim Ravcha Debesa, because of the sustenance of the house. Satosis' first answer is that in the case of the Gemara, it says, the reason why it says Shal Min Aisha is because the woman is involved in the Shela as well. That the Baal doesn't have the power on his own to lend it out. And he can only render that in conjunction with the woman. So that's why the Gemara says, Shal min ha'isha, because her consent is necessary. So according to the first answer of Tosfos, when it comes to the she'ela of objects of nichsei malug, so it requires both, the husband and the wife. Inami, or else, hachikama, shal min ha'ish. The second answer is saying you could even say that the man does have the power to lend it. That he has the power to lend it. It belongs to him and he has the power to lend it. If that's the case, so why does it say shal min ha'isha? Okay? Inami hachikama, shal min ha'ish, nichsei malug, shehen shal isha. That's what the Gemara meant. The second answer is that shal min ha'isha is not referring to who was the person that contracted the she'ela. Okay? Shal min isha means objects that are of the isha. Objects that are of the nichsei malug. That's what it's a reference to. Now, the shal min ha'ish. Okay? He borrowed from the man. But the reason why it says isha is objects that belong to the woman as part of the nichsei malug. So either way, Tosis says you can learn. In other words, you can learn our Gemara either way. That is, whether you assume that it's essential that the woman be involved in the she'ela itself, so then it's obvious it's easy to say shal min ha'isha. Or you could say that no, that the man has the right to lend it. Though not necessarily to be mocher. That lending it is different, he has the right to lend it. But the reason why it says shal min ha'isha is because it's a reference to the object. That means objects that are from the isha. So let's just summarize for a second. The Gemara is asking a question that the husband, or the husband in conjunction with the wife, whatever the case is, it's all we need to know is that it's definitely possible to lend out the object of nichsei malug. A parah of nichsei malug can be lent out. The only question of Tosfos was whether permission has to be from both the woman and the man, or the man has the right to lend it out without her permission. It doesn't matter. Okay, for our purposes, we're not really concerned anymore. Now, the object was, somebody borrowed this object of nichsei malug, and not the woman. It would seem basically that if the woman was with the person, then that would be considered balavimo because she's the baal. But the husband was lent out to him. Is that considered to be balavimo? On a simple level, the question is whether that type of bailus which the husband has, okay, the bailus which gives him the right to use the peros, is that sufficient to render it ba'alavimo? Because now that's a different framework. This is a different framework. And the framework over here is that if the owner of the object is lent out to the shoel, so the shoel is exempt. But what do you mean by the owner of the object? Okay? Is the fact that he has this right of usage, the right to the peros, is that sufficient to render him a baal vis-a-vis the din of ba'alavimo? That's the question. Now we're going to go on to the next case. Now the Gemara takes up the case of Isha Sheshala, a woman who borrowed something. Okay? V'nishal Labal. And the owner, whoever lent it to her, was hired out to her husband. And the Gemara wants to know, is that considered to be Baal Avimo? Of course the question is, why? What's going on over here? How does this factor into the whole issue of Nichsei Malug? L'chor, if a woman borrows an object, and she's using the object, so it would seem that the owner of the object has to be rented out to her. If that's the case, then you'd have Baal Avimo. If the owner of the object is rented out to her husband,